Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Well, howdy!
It is the 23rd day of October. Tomorrow being a Saturday, and the 24th of October, as we've noted through the week, the horn will be 4 years old. Hot diggity. Pretty exciting. And what a testament it is to all of you who have given so much of yourselves, your time, your energies, your ideas, your creativity, and yes, your financial support to help us reach this fourth birthday. The ideas behind the horn are actually older than four. My broadcast career is more than four. My broadcast career started when I was 15, so we won't count all that. I mean, it's hard to count Jesus. This is Jimmy as part of gospel. Never mind. But we're four. And, you know, I'm proud of some of the good... I'm proud of a lot of things that have to do with the horn. I'm proudest, though, of the activism. You know, this is activist radio, and I'm proudest of the activism that you have felt moved to participate in. And I don't know if you got your email from brighterplanet.com or not, but for those of you and the truth seekers over with the Malloy Show, for those of you who kicked in your three votes each at brighterplanet.com and voted for the SEED project in the Coal River Valley of West Virginia, thank you and congratulations. Took a little time for the word to get around, but we won. We won with that project. I say we because I'm a West Virginian, and this is a win for West Virginia as we try to look toward a sustainable, reasonable economic future and build away from what has tormented this state for over 100 years, coal. And you had a big hand in it. There's a map there. If you look at brighterplanet.com, there's a map that show where the votes for the projects came from, for I think the top three projects. And you'll note that there's a significant cluster around West Virginia of little green dots, and that's to be expected. What's not so much to be expected is the proliferation of dots around the country in places you would not expect folks to be interested in a project centered in Appalachia. All up and down the West Coast, up into the Northeast, all over this country, out into the Midwest. That's you. That is you. And that is the difference that you made. And it just makes me bust with pride. So thank you. On behalf of the SEED Project, on behalf of Andrew Munn, on behalf of Coal River Mountain Watch, thank you. So it is our fourth birthday tonight. We're celebrating a day early. And like an unwanted birthday gift, I'm feeling a little rough. I don't know if what's been around our family over the last month has come back for round two, or if it's just a day of ugh. But I'm feeling a little rough. I don't know if I'm going to get through 3 hours of program tonight, but I will give it the old college try. Because there's some stuff out there for this Friday on the front porch that just can't be missed. In addition to me feeling a little rough, apparently I'm the first human being who can make a computer sick. because the internet has died on the production machine, and some of the stuff that I wanted to get to, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to, but we're going to try. And at some point in time, I will probably have to reboot this machine just to see if I can get back into the chat room, get email, all of those fun things. Never a dull moment, you know. But I wanted to start. Representative Alan Grayson from Florida is fast making a reputation as the hammer of Republicans. Not a hammer among Republicans, because he's a Democrat. He is a hammer, and Republicans are nails. And he is driving them like John Henry the steel-driving man. And this latest incident is absolutely fascinating, and that's why it's kind of frustrating for me not to be able to get to the audio that I had, because I wanted you to hear it in Alan Grayson's own words, because they are magnificent. Alan Grayson actually had the guts to stand up against the Republican Party in regard to ACORN, you know, which is, the Association of Community Organizers for Reform Now, ACORN, has become the bête noire, the great crusade of the nut job right, including people like Representative Paul Brown from Georgia. And this transaction took place in a hearing of the Science and Technology Committee. And Brown was having a hissy, trying to get some sort of bill across that would single out ACORN and strip it of federal funding. This is, of course, unconstitutional. And Alan Grayson ate him for lunch. And it's inspiring, and it's also funny. Don't have the audio at present, I don't think. Nope. Which is a shame. So we'll just do the reader. Mr. Grayson says, and there's some comedy coming, so, or at least I hope so. Mr. Grayson says, "I'd like to ask the gentleman from Georgia a few questions, and I'll yield to him for the purpose of having answers to these questions. Does the gentleman from Georgia know what a bill of attainder is?" And Representative Paul Brown from Georgia says, yes, and in fact, it's been very explicitly described by the courts. Mm-hmm. And Grayson says, okay, what is it? At which point, Paul Brown begins shuffling papers like mad and scrambling. And he says, the courts have applied a two-pronged test. Number one, whether specific individuals or entities are affected by the statute. Number two, when the legislation affects punishment on those individuals, it serves no legitimate regulatory purpose. At which Alan Grayson replies, what does the Constitution say about bills of attainder? Okay, I suggest that this is not a bill of attainder. It's certainly does focus on a specific entity, but it does not inflict punishment by any means. In fact, will the gentleman from Georgia explain what the Constitution says about bills of attainder? And then another congressman busts in. Mr. Chairman, will the gentleman yield for a second? The gentleman from Florida. And Grayson said, no, I'd like an answer to my question. Remind you of something? It reminded me of something. It reminded me of this.
The Emancipation Proclamation.
Who do you like that? Spot right there on the uniform.
Guess I ought to be sending this out to the cleaners.
Boy.
Now, you was asking about the
Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah. Well, the Emancipation Proclamation was a proclamation, is what it was.
What was it about?
About emancipation. What do you think it was about? What was it about? Use your head, man. It's common knowledge. There was these folks. And how else was they going to get themselves emancipated unless there was a proclamation? So they got themselves a proclamation, and they called it the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I'm surprised at you for not knowing that, Andy. And I'll tell you something else. I'm even more surprised that you think I don't know about the Emancipation Proclamation.
We're still waiting for you to tell us about it.
Well, if you get so smart alecky about it, maybe I'm not even going to tell you.
There you go. The Republican Party is now officially Barney Fife. Would the gentleman tell me what the Constitution says about bills of attainder? Will the gentleman from Georgia explain what the Constitution says about bills of attainder? It's a bill, and it's about attainder. There was these folks getting attainded, and they needed a bill, and so there's a bill of attainder. They're not sharp, and it's just delightful when they prove how non-sharp they are. And eventually, Representative Grayson says, the question is, will the gentleman from Georgia agree with me that the Bill of Attainder Clause was intended not as a narrow or technical provision, but as an implementation of the separation of powers and a general safeguard against legislative exercise of the judicial function, or more simply, trial by legislature? Will the gentleman agree with that? And, of course, Paul Brown's a pig-licking, and that's Mr. Grayson's a Democrat, so he can't be agreeing with him. And so, no, sir, I will not. If you get all snippy like that, I might never talk to you about no bill of attainder. No, he said, no, sir, I will not, and I ask counsel to help us with this. I think all this is a determination of the court, and I'd like to appeal to Mr. Sensenbrenner. To which Mr. Grayson replies delightfully, thereby closing the loop, swinging the trap, as it were, allowing Mr. Brown to hang upon his own petard. Well, I'm sorry, but it's my time, not yours or Mr. Sensenbrenner, so I will reclaim my time, and I will point out that what you just said you would not agree to is from a Supreme Court case called the United States versus Brown, something I would expect you might know about, given your name. In other words, the language that Grayson quoted to Representative Paul Brown from Georgia comes directly from that Supreme Court case. And it describes a bill of attainder. Well, and see, this is the fun part. He couldn't even get Grayson to say bills of attainder are in the Constitution and bills of attainder are forbidden inside the Constitution. Can't do it. At all. No ex post facto laws, no bills of attainder. And Paul Brown couldn't even say that because Paul Brown is, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah. A moron. A genuine member of the Jackacid Society. Idiot. Dumbass. Doofus. He is Barney Fife. Wow, it's a proclamation. It's of emancipation. There are these folks, see? Mother. Just exquisite degrees of idiocy, ignorance, and sort of all mixed in with a soupçon of hate inside the Republican Party. It is not to be, well, that was too good to pass by. It just couldn't. So it's about 15 minutes past the hour. It's Friday on the front porch. And enough pontificating from me. Let's see what's cooking on the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, this is not good. Hello? Okay. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
How's it going?
It's good.
Oh, this is Kenneth out here in Hawaii.
Oh, hey, Ken. How are you?
Sorry, I had to run back to the house so I could pick you up on reception.
Oh, okay. Not all out of breath, I hope.
Yeah, just a little bit, but no problem. just wanted to talk to you a little bit and see if you had heard a few things going on in VA in Virginia.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, about the the naked man being arrested for brewing his coffee in his home.
Oh no! I'm so glad I did turn the mic on because this I gotta hear.
Yeah. Okay. And it kind of goes to my heart because he's from Hawaii. This is so funny. Okay. He's from Hawaii, and of course he's got long hair. Okay. So 5:30 in the morning, a lady walks by his house and says she sees a naked man in the house and calls a cop.
There's a naked man in there in a house. We don't have naked men in houses in Virginia.
No. Springfield, Virginia. Good old Virginia.
That's precious. And the cops came, I'm sure. Well, no, the cops visited
the
residence.
Cops came. They came and arrested him.
For being
naked in his own house.
What? Was he standing in front of, like, a full picture window so that everything was on display? I mean, I'm kind of afraid to... Dear God.
Yeah, it's kind of...
What'd they charge him with, Ken?
Indecent exposure. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It's so insane.
No, it's the word I'm looking for is plumb crazy.
Yeah. And this is why I left Virginia. If our own body is a sin, I mean, I don't think... We'd been made this way, would we have?
Well, you know, I've always argued, Ken, that it takes a dirty mind to create a dirty situation.
A dirty mind to think these things up. I just wanted to hammer that, and then did you see the Oprah show? I'm not a fan of it. I hardly ever watch it. I was up late at night, and all of a sudden it was on, and she was interviewing ladies from around the world.
Yes.
And talking about just how they live, you know, their health care, what they do, you know, just their life. And every one of the countries, like, when she mentioned, well, isn't it kind of a socialized society? The people in those countries were like, no, we think it's kind of civilized to take care of our poor and our needy. And Oprah shut up so fast. But that was a good one, too.
I don't get a lot of television, but, you know, every now and then something good happens on these things, and it's good to hear about them.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, we are one of, if not the last industrialized country that doesn't take care of our own. And it's unacceptable. It is inhumane. But then again, as a banner I saw over at BartCop the other day, a little ad said, if you have health insurance, thank God. If you don't have health insurance, thank the Republican Party. And that's really quite true, isn't it?
Well, they would like you to believe that, so, you know, you have to be a believer to have health care, or follower of the Republicans. And then you'll be prosperous somehow, and you'll be, you know, you have enough money to pay for health care, supposedly. You know. But one other thing that Oprah said, the ladies mentioned to Oprah, they had free electricity. Every one of them, except for, I think, Brazil.
Electricity?
Yeah.
Wow.
How's that? Tell us, you know, do you think our country would be a little more productive if we didn't have an electric bill?
I'm thinking so. I'm thinking people would I know this household would have a lot more money every month.
Yeah.
You know, one of these days we're going to find somebody that will, some organization or something that will help us get this radio show completely off the grid. And at that point, that'll be one of the proudest moments in my life.
Wind turbines and solar and
right.
So on.
Exactly.
Good. Yeah.
It's one of the long-term goals. We haven't gotten it done in the first 4 years, but that doesn't mean it can't happen.
And that goes back to the wind turbines again. You know, I don't know if my vote went through on the website, but I'm so glad to hear that y'all won the project. Great.
I would assume that I would assume that it did go through. certainly hope so. Because well, I mean, everybody in the Horn, the Truth Seekers, were all such an important part of this because, and like I said, the demographics of the map show it.
Yes, I'm out here in Hawaii. Wind turbines, energy, this all these healthcare, this is a human issue. It's not a red or a blue issue or black or purple or white or red or whatever color.
Exactly.
It's a human issue. At least we did have one positive note this week. And that was on the medical marijuana.
Yes.
And I'm out here in Hawaii, so I can benefit. Thank you. Thank you, Obama. Thank you, Mr. Eric Holder, whoever is growing a brain there.
Well, you know, I particularly like the statement coming from the Justice Department, Ken, to the effect that chasing after medical marijuana is not an appropriate use of federal resources.
Yeah.
And really, how can the right wing get upset about it in light of the fact that, you know, they're we want to get government off your back? Well, the Obama administration just got the government off a lot of people's backs. Because, because what it is it's essentially a recognition of the right of the states to address this issue as they deem best.
Yeah. And if you give somebody an option of being legal versus black market, don't you think they're going to want to be legal? But they don't have to be around that black market or any, you know, be touched by, you know, and the old theory, the gateway connection or something they called it, the gateway effect or something.
Oh, a gateway drug? Yeah.
It's the two other drugs. Okay, ask, I'd say at least 90% of your marijuana smokers, what other drugs do they do? And I guarantee you they do even less.
Oh, they'll
drugs and everything.
Yeah, now their Cheeto and Dorito intake. But, yeah, you know, where people who are sick are concerned, that's a benefit. You know, as an appetite stimulant, cannabis is almost unsurpassed. And for people on chemotherapy and such like, they very badly need to eat. Because you've got the body has to be strong enough to fight back the disease.
Right. But the nutrition in the cannabis, if you eat it, actually, you know, you cannot dispute that. That is so awesome how good it makes your body. It's the right levels of oils, the omega-3s, omega-6 fatty acids, and your amino acids. It's just the perfect match for your digestive system and what your body needs. It's amazing.
It does a body good. Milk's already using that.
Well, milk, I don't know if milk does a body good, though, actually. You know, that's the question nowadays. Depends on where that milk's coming from.
Well, absolutely. You know, we had the milk story a month or so back about the weird little protein gizmo molecule hickey that may be contributing to all kinds of illnesses that comes from milk. And in fact, they identified the source of it as Cow Zero, and I believe it was Michael Kid A in the chat room who said that that's a great name for a punk band. He may be trying to get.
You already have one named that.
Yeah, Cow Zero. I mean, that's a great Cow Zero.
Cow Zero. That's so great. Well, just wanted to give you a call, Bob. It's so nice to hear a few things happening good, you know, and we just got to keep people informed about the things that aren't going right, and just keep a little bit less negative about it, but just at least keep people informed.
Yeah, and have a little fun along the way. I mean, my God.
Right.
I kid you not, when I read that Alan Grayson exchange with Representative Paul Brown from Georgia, honest to Pete, the Barney Fife Emancipation Proclamation thing was the first thing that came to my mind. Because
I'm glad you played that.
Because what Paul Brown was, he was desperately trying to avoid saying, well, I've been here in the House of Representing for a while now, and I ain't got around to reading that Constitution I'm constantly hollering about. I ain't read it none. Dang it. So whether it's, you know, authoritarian police arresting men who, you know, naked while in home, or right-wing authoritarian Republican members of the House of Representatives, they're all of the same feather. And what about the woman who made the 911 call?
I'm so glad you got back to that, because I did forget to mention one thing about the lady.
Yes?
You never guess who she was married to.
Can't wait.
A police officer.
Well, of course.
No. But,
dirty nakedness, sitting there drinking. Oh, my God. You may not believe me, Ken. You may not believe me. But for some reason or another, I have had Ray Stevens' The Streak running around my head this afternoon. You remember the song, right?
I'm not sure.
It was big in the 70s when Streakin' hit. Ray Stevens, of course, comedy songwriter.
I'm gonna look it up today.
They call him The Streak, fastest thing on 2 feet. Okay. He's just as proud as he can be of his anatomy. He's going to give him a peek. Ethel, don't look, Ethel! But he got her over in the produce aisle. Yeah. Like I said, it's been stuck. It earwormed me earlier today, and lo and behold, here you come with this story about this shocked police officer's wife and the naked Hawaiian man in his own home getting arrested for indecent exposure. You know, one of these days somebody is going to try a case, Ken. And they're going to win something like indecent exposure, because, one, he has to have intended to expose himself.
Right, right.
And, two, at some point in time, the issue will be tried as to whether or not human anatomy is, as a matter of law, indecent. And we will have made
the country we want to live in if our own bodies are indecent.
Yeah, dirty, 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 dirty. Don't look at the dirty body. Yeah. Yeah, lady, look away. Don't look, Ethel! Yeah.
Why cut through his yard?
What?
She cut through his yard. She was trespassing. They even mentioned that in the article, but guess who the news station that covered it first was? Good old My Fox.
Charming, of course.
It was a Fox affiliate, because it was called My Fox in Virginia somewhere.
Isn't that their website or something?
But of course, in the article, they made it as derogatory towards him as possible, you know, without knowing anything about him or anything. So that's the way the media likes to portray things. Well, they and them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just,
I don't think I brought that up before.
Well, if I ever get back on the inner tubes, I'm going to have to see if I can get my hands on The Streak, and because now I have to play it. There's no getting around it.
Well, just want to say hey, and good hearing from you, Bob.
Oh, good to hear from you too, Ken. You take care and have a great weekend.
And next time, I hope I'm not running. I won't be so out of breath.
Ah, you did fine. You did just fine.
You have a good day over there.
All right. Take care.
Aloha.
Indeed. Aloha. Love that word. Just love that word. Which I guess brands me as kind of a weird person for, you know, getting all worked up about a word. But, yeah, I do. Does he have the internet back? We're trying to find out. Oh, for pity's sakes. Okay. Apparently not. So that may severely curtail my ability to do this birthday show. But I'm gonna slog along. I'll do my dead level best. And, you know, it is Friday on the front porch, so you're sort of in charge tonight anyway, if you wish to contribute your thoughts, your ideas. I got to look, when the tubes get back, I just have to find this story out of Virginia. I mean, truth be told, I walk through the house from time to time in nothing but a pair of gym shorts and shoes, you know. It's comfortable. I know, it's also horrible to contemplate. But we've got, and I walk past, and you know, if you were, say, looking up from the house up down the road, all you can see is, you know, from the waist up, and, you know, if your mind's dirty enough, you can extrapolate total nudity. And there is the key. If your mind is dirty enough. And that's the important part. Apparently, Ethel, the policeman's wife, has a dirty mind. So let's see what's good. You hear the phone ringing there, don't you? Let's see who's on it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good, I think. Apart from, you know, little technical problems and things like that.
The tubes are down?
Just to one computer, because obviously the program's getting out.
Right, right. Well, you got to remember, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Absolutely.
My favorite part of that was always, and it didn't get as much attention, but my favorite part of that little meme was always that Steven said, it's not a big truck.
And yeah, because
I like that better than, what's that?
Well, I was going to say, I remember when he said that and noticing that myself. And several years ago, the Harvard Lampoon that puts out a parody of a periodical every year? And they did a parody of USA Today. And you know how USA Today has that little blue block that says, via satellite? You've seen USA Today.
Yeah.
Well, the parody version said, via big truck.
Very nice.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
But because everybody repeated the meme, it's a series of tubes, it's a series of tubes, and I, to this day, I still do it. But I just love, I prefer the it's not a big truck part. And then if you really dig into the quote, if people remember, or if you maybe never saw the whole quote, Stevens explains, you know, I don't know, this in front of the, you know, some Senate committee on, you know, big trucks with tubes or whatever. And he starts out explaining how his staff sent him an internet on Friday, and he didn't get the internet until Tuesday or something like that. He was trying to say email.
Right, yeah.
But he called it an internet.
Well, and what's the latest story? Donald Rumfield, tried to edit his own Wikipedia biography. Did you catch this one?
Oh, no. Did he?
And I guess it was in some book or tell-all or whatever, and they reported that Rumfield referred to it as his wiki-wacky.
Okay, so yeah, there's one, and Stevens, so neither of those guys are around anymore.
Yeah, his wiki-wacky that doesn't come on the big truck.
Yeah. Yeah, but and then what was the guy? What's the guy? The couldn't tell you what a bill of attainder was. Was that?
That's Representative Paul Brown of Georgia.
Yeah, he was doing some representing, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh, he was.
Yeah, that
Georgia's in the house.
The Barney Fife thing was perfect, but immediately my mind went to the House of Representing, and then I think it's Albert who likes to refer to President Obama as President Not Sure.
Yes.
And for all those who don't know the movie Idiocracy, that's a compliment, not a...
Right.
Calling him President Not Sure is not an insult. It's a compliment. But you'll know, you know, if he ever does jump the shark and just, you know, evolves from President Not Sure to President Camacho. Brown, that guy, he'd give him one of those big medals to wear around his neck, and he'd be good for the cabinet.
Absolutely. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Yeah. Wow, you smart. But seriously, I know Idiocracy. It's so easy just to go there. It's just.
And people who haven't seen it still probably don't get why we are so enamored of it. But I will be forever in Joe Vecchio's debt for his.
Did he turn you on to that?
Yeah, for his insistence that I watch it.
Oh well, good job, Joe. If he's out there.
Yeah, because it was almost to the point where he was, you know, like, okay, I'm gonna stay on the phone with you, Bob, until you have actually got the thing running and I can hear the opening credits.
Well, sometimes you need to do stuff like that, and if Joe's out there, if he's out there anywhere on the, you know, on this wonderful thing that's not a big truck, I thank him as well, because, you know, it was you guys on the horn that turned me on to it, so I'm glad he turned you on to it. But anyway, it's so easy to go there, but I'm just thinking, man, if our Congress people don't even know what a bill of attainder is, how long is it till we have Monday night rehabilitation?
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Although, I guess, to be fair, at least
well, you do. Okay, first of all,
at least in Idiocracy, they did have trials. At least, I don't remember if there was a bill of attainder moment in that movie or not, but at least they did have trials. It was just basically. Well, was the man naked in his house? Yeah. Well, then he's guilty as shit.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Another great moment. And
guilty as shit. Send him to Monday night rehabilitation, and then this is a true
get
chased around by the dildos.
this is a true story. I think it was reported. Oh, I guess a year or so. Because remember, the movie was distributed by
Fox,
right? And it was reported to be about a year later that Fox had retained the rights. The branding rights to Brondo, and was intending to release said beverage on the market.
Yeah, I think they did. I'm fairly certain you can buy that. I mean, I'm sure Fox gets the cut of that. Hopefully, Mike Judge gets the cut of that too. But.
It just blew me away at the time when I heard it, because, you know, so, and again, you know, for, please, everybody, just make it so that you can participate in understanding why we are so enamored of this film. See it. It really is a must view.
But yeah, it's nice to see our Congress people doing some representing in the House of Representing. That's always a hopeful sign. I just wanted to call real quick because I said I'd call every day this week and do my little pitch, which again is not something I normally like to do. Normally I'd leave this to Kate or, you know, somebody else who can do this better than I. Well, you know, the horns, I don't know, are we officially celebrating a birthday today? Or
yes, this is birthday Friday.
This is birthday Friday, okay.
Because the way I'm feeling, I'm not entirely certain that I'll be here Monday.
And
that plus, you know, I couldn't not come on the air tonight because I'll be off air Wednesday and probably Friday trying to, you know, get back from D.C.
Right, right. All right. Well, I don't want to put a sour note on the birthday. For starters, happy birthday to the horn.
Happy birthday to us.
All of us. Clap for 4 years. So happy birthday, and the horn's going to be four tomorrow, and starting next week. Going to be kicking off the fifth year. So basically all I've been doing this week is just asking people, if you've never contributed before, please just put in $5, earmark it for the birthday, just put in $5 just to help kick off year five. Just put in $5, even if it's just this one time, just put in $5 to kick off the fifth year so the horn can, you know, maybe get a little running start into the fifth year. You know, it's not some kind of grand, brilliant scheme to solve the funding crisis, but, you know, I know you guys always need to help. So I'm sure there's got to be a lot of people out there that are in my situation that could spare $5 or more, but just for whatever reason haven't. And maybe you've been listening for 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years. Maybe you've been listening all 4 years. And I know there's some people that are tapped out, but I think for a lot of people, if you just contribute $5 just this once, what better time? You know, you're probably not even going to feel it. And do it now, because the holidays are coming up, and then, you know, you're going to be spending money on whatever kind of holiday crap you got to spend money on. So just do it now. Get out of the way. And, of course, if you contribute more, that's fine. And, again, I'm not talking to the people who contribute all the time. But if you want to, put in an extra $5. I did for the birthday. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who just have never contributed. And like I said the other day, you know, the horn dodged a bullet this month. And you just never know. At any moment, you know, some kind of financial or equipment crisis could put the horn in dire straits. And, you know, I always worry, you know, if one or two of the people who do contribute regularly, you know, lose their job or whatever. You know what I mean? It's just...
Oh, yeah.
I get the feeling that the funding for the horn right now is very shaky and very...
It always has been.
You know what I mean? And very, very tenuous, and any little thread...
There is, to put it bluntly...
You pull on any little thread, the whole thing could unravel.
Yeah, to put it bluntly, Michael, the people who do contribute, there is not a dime that is not needed.
Right. So all I'm asking is, you know, I'm not asking anybody to become a regular contributor. If you do, you know, maybe you'll think, hey, it feels kind of good to support Conversation Radio. Because, I mean, it's a fact. I'm not shilling. This is just how I feel. You know, there isn't anything else like this out there, you know, on the tubes or, you know, even if you look at the big trucks out there, there's nothing out there on the tubes or the big trucks or any, there's nothing else out there quite like this. So, I mean, is it worth $5 just one time? And a couple days ago I called in and before I came on, you had played, Guerrilla Radio by, Rage Against the Machine. And I remember you mentioned one of the lyrics that stuck out to you. And, I had it pulled up yesterday, but I know what you're talking
about. I just don't have it immediately to mind. Right.
It has to start somewhere. What better place than here? What better time than? I think it goes. It has to start sometime. It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now? I believe that's the quote. And seriously, what better time than now? The horn's, you know, getting ready to kick off its fifth year. I do believe that makes it older than any other liberal radio network going, does it not?
Yeah.
Okay. So...
Look, I mean, just when you think about what we do with... We do so much with so little.
Right.
I don't know this to be true, but I have heard that before its bankruptcy, at one point, Air America was going through something on the order of $87,000 a day.
Right.
A day. $87,000 a year would let me pay people, which ultimately we'd like to do.
Right, right.
And suffice to say, we ain't nowhere near it.
No, I understand that. And it's just like, you know, if I don't know, like let's say if even just, which I personally think is a modest number, but if 1,000 people, I'm a little cynical, I don't think that's going to happen, but you know, if say 1,000 people just put in $5 just one time, yeah, no, the horn wouldn't be able to pay people, but at least you guys could get through the next, you know, two and a half months without sweating it too much. The regular contributors would probably still keep doing their part. And, you know, it might give you and guys some breathing room to, you know, try to figure out. Because I know you guys are always looking for, you know, other more permanent solutions to the funding situation. And again, David from Maine has been mentioning, and I hope he will keep mentioning.
And let me just say that, good to his word. I guess David had a couple of good auctions and was able to kick something along, and it was really, really much appreciated. So his idea works.
Right, right. So I mean, there's all, and I applaud him for that, and anybody else who has gotten involved or plans to get involved with the Horn Auctions program through David. You know, I applaud that. And of course, you know, God only knows, well, you know, the Flying Spaghetti Monster, whatever, only knows. Maybe next year, you know, this kind of pitch won't be necessary, but we don't know. We got to get there first. And so far, it's been contributions that have been kind of keeping the thing rolling. And as far as I know, at least today, it's still needed. You know, what other sources might, or, you know, what other funding methods might work out in the future, who knows? There's a lot of ideas, and the Horn Auctions is one, of course. But, you know, even if you're just, you know, you're just lazy, okay? You're just listening, and you're just lazy. Trust me, I know. I've been there. It's not going to take you any time. Have you ever, you know, speaking of eBay, have you ever bought anything on eBay, people out there? Come on, because if you have, then I know, you know, 90% chance you have a PayPal account. So it's not going to take you any time to just go to, and if you don't go to the Head On website regularly, if you listen via iTunes or White Rose Society or some other stream, just go to headonradionetwork.com/contribute, and there's a snail mail address right there if you want to send something, and there's the PayPal form right there if you want to go that way. So, I'll shut up in a minute here, but I wanted to just kind of put my money where my mouth is. We had the funding crisis earlier this month, and I put in a little bit more than I usually do. And I'm sure a lot of other people have too. But, you know, I'm willing to put in a little bit more. I would really like to see if at least 10 people, and I know this is cheesy, I thought a lot about should I do this, should I not do this? Because it's so cheesy and it's so, you know, public radio fund drive type crap, if you know what I mean, where people do the challenge. But I don't know. I thought about it and I decided, what the hell? I'm just going to do it. So here's.
Well, your pitch just generated. It just hit the mailbox, a $5 contribution. So.
Okay. Well, we'll count that as one. Okay. If 10 people from now till the end of the weekend. Okay. If 10 people just put in $5. If you want to do more, that's fine. If you want to put in 10, 15, 20, whatever, earmark it for the birthday, so we know that it counts for one of the, but it only counts for five, okay? Because I want 10 people to contribute. If you want to do more than five, that's fine, but I want 10 people to put in $5 or more, and towards, you know, for the birthday. and anytime from now till the end of the weekend, and I will, well, let me just say this too. Because again, I am not trying to harp on this to the people who already give, because I know there's a lot of people who already give, and I get the idea that some of the people who give, I'm not trying to crawl up on the cross, because I'm not one of those.
Yeah, because we need the wood.
Yeah, right. I'm not one of these people I'm about to mention, but I know, or at least I think I have a pretty good idea, that there are people in the small group of regular contributors who contribute regularly till it hurts. Okay, I'm not one of those people, you know, I've given up, you know, I don't have extra channels. I'm like, I get free 70 channels, a cable, a department I rent. I decided, you know, give up the DVR and all the, and I gave up some channels that I like, but, you know, I decided it's not worth it to put the money every month towards the horn. It's not, that's not like, oh my God, you know, everybody, you know, play the world's smallest violin for Michael. I'm not one of those people, you know, I can feel it, but I don't really, I haven't.
Right, you're not down to cat food yet.
Right, I haven't really been given till it hurts, but I think there are people, I get that feeling that there are people in the small group of contributors that do give till it hurts. So the last thing I want to do is try to, you know, suck any of those people dry. Because, my God, how do I appreciate it so much that they, along with me, are helping keep the horn going. So anyway, 10 people contribute $5 at least from now till the end of the weekend for the birthday, you know, earmark it for the birthday. And I want to see at least 5 new contributors in there. That's the thing, okay? So, like I've been saying all week, if you regularly contribute, you want to just put in an extra 5 for the birthday, just give the horn a little bump, because, you know, it needs a bump, that's for sure. That's fine, but I want to see at least 5 new people in there, you know, because you never know, maybe it'll feel good, and then you'll get, and then maybe you want to do it every month. I don't know, and if not, then hey, you know, if that's the only $5 you put in all year for the horn, that's fine too, and, you know, every bit counts. I remember, I think it was Bruce Birch one time said that the horn runs on, you know, like paper clips, rubber bands, and chewing gum or something, you know, like a MacGyver sort of thing. and I remember,
and sometimes we run low on those.
Right. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, I really, you know, I like that image, and, you know, I have visited, Horn HQ, I hope that's okay for me to mention.
Yeah.
I have seen it in person, folks, and that's the truth. That is the truth. So,
okay, we're up to 3 now.
We're up to what?
We're up to 3.
Okay. Well, I never finished telling what my pitch was. Okay, I want to see at least 10 people. More is good. I want to see at least 10 people put in at least $5. And I want to see at least half of those new contributors, okay? And if that happens before the end of the weekend, I will match that 10 times 5, and I will put in another 50 on top of what I've already put in this month.
Wow.
And I think by the time I do that it's, you know, look, I'm not, like I said, I'm not giving till it hurts. I know there's people who give more than I do, but I think by the time I'm done with all this little pitch I'm about to do, that'll make it, I will have given more probably this month than I have all the rest of the year. So, and I normally contribute every month, but I'm okay. Don't worry about me. Make me do it, people. Make me do it. Contribute your $5 and make me do it, because this is one of those months where I get 3 paychecks instead of 2, so I'm good for it. So I'll put in, if we get 10 people put in $5 for the birthday, like I said, you want to do more, but I want to see 10 unique contributors, at least half of which are new contributors who haven't given to the horn before, put in $5 or more. I'll put in $50 to the horn, and then I'll triple that. I'll put in $50 to the horn. I will go to thegyjamesshow.com/contribute.html. I will put in $50 to Guy. And then I will go to whiterosesociety.org, and I will put in $50 to Ben for the White Rose Society. So I'll you know, I'll put in another. So you put in five.
Man, that's making $5 work till it sweats.
Okay.
That's beautiful, Michael.
All I'm asking is, you put in five. You just put, if you put in five, if you happen to be one of those first 10, then you just put in 20. Okay, so I'm taking your money times four, I'm doubling it to the horn, and then I'm giving, you know, five to Guy, five to the White Rose. So basically, I want 10. I should have wrote this down. I hope this makes sense. Basically, if we get 10 half new contributors, then I will put in 50 to the horn, 50 to Guy, and 50 to White Rose. So I'm going to shut up now so you can do your show. I know that's not like, you know, I wish I could do more myself. I wish I could say, and if we get 100, I'll put in 500 to each of them.
No, Michael, you're doing plenty. You are doing plenty.
You know what I mean? I wish I had the capacity to say, and if we get up to 100, I'll do 500 each. But I can't do it. This is just, because, I mean, we got to be able to get at least 10 new, or, you know, at least 5 new contributors, I would think. And if we get more, then that's good, too. You know, if you're the 11th contributor, then, yes, yeah, sorry, I can't quadruple your money, but you know, Bob still needs the 5. So,
yeah, and frankly, in addition to meeting monthlies, it'll help.
You guys always want to do more.
It'll help with the trip next week, because
right,
you know,
yeah.
There's something to be said, and I don't think it can be overestimated, Michael. You know, these are I don't know. Nobody saw Guy and me, and our buddy Matt Osborne at Netroots Nation, but there were a lot of social events, and there were a lot of, you know, there was a lot of glass clinking and a lot of fun had by all. We worked, and I mean, we worked 16-hour days,
right.
and you know, humping equipment and getting streams out and everything. So when we go on these things, these are not pleasure trips. That's not to say that they're not enjoyable, but they are work, and they, you know, showing up, as they say, is half the battle. And we have to, and the horn has to not just be heard but seen. And that's why we're going to be in D.C. next week. And it would be nice, you know, it'd be nice not to sweat that. But, you know, so I appreciate everything you've said, and I appreciate everything you've done. And everything that everyone else does. And I extend that appreciation on behalf of everybody who pours their energies, their time, their talent into the horn, because it is far from being only me. You know, I guess it was 2 months after, about 2 months, or maybe a month after we started this, that we got in touch, and I met John Fox and Bruce Birch. And from there, it has just mushroomed and grown, and people have come and people have gone. People are always, you know, there are people in the background who don't get a lot of noise made about them, but without whom we would be absolutely lost. And so I extend that appreciation on behalf of everybody who makes all this go.
Well, I appreciate the horn, Bob. You said you thanked me for all I do. I don't do nearly enough. I'll just say that. I wish I could do more, for the horn. I just know I appreciate everything, all the people you mentioned, everything that you and Guy, John Fox, Peter, Bruce Birch, I can't think of everybody, but everybody that, and everybody who contributes to keep this going. I mean, I appreciate it so much. I mean, it just,
well, that's the thing. It's something we're doing for each other.
What's that?
It's something we're doing for each other.
Right. Let me throw this out there. Maybe this will hit some nerves with some people. The way I found the horn, and I suspect there's probably a lot of other people who found the horn almost the exact same way I did. A couple years ago, when Mike Malloy suddenly got canned without warning by Air America, and I remember I was just, you guys gotta remember that was back in the bad old days of the Bush years. And I was just like, oh my god, what, you know what I mean? What am I gonna do? I'm gonna pull my hair out. I'm gonna scream myself to sleep. You know, like, Cassie Malloy, I think they still do the little tagline sometimes, during breaks where she says something like, I can't remember exactly, like, you know, don't scream yourself to sleep or something like that. Let Mike do it for you, something like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I forget the exact quote. I'm probably butchering it, but you know what I mean? I thought, what in the F am I going to do? I'm gonna scream myself to sleep every night. It's just like, you know, it's like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Mike, you know, Malloy was the only thing keeping me sane in these insane times. And it was just like totally without warning. And it was just like, I thought I was going to lose my mind. And then I heard, I looked in a big truck and it wasn't there. So I checked the series of tubes and I found on the series of tubes, something called the Guy James Show, and Mike was going to do an interview on the Guy James Show. I think it may very well have been his first interview after having been fired. So I tuned in for that because, you know, I was desperately craving to hear, you know, a little sanity from Mike. So I tuned into that, and I remember, you know, it's a great interview. You know, Guy did a great job because he's a professional. But I remember thinking, you know, hey, it's just, you know, Mike Malloy or not, you know, Guy James seems pretty cool in his own right. So I started listening to the Guy James Show, and then, you know, he started listening to the rest of the Horn. I think at the time you guys were doing the, while Mike was off the air, you guys were doing the classic Malloy.
Yeah, yes.
Repeats. So, you know, so that helped keep me sane, and then, you know, and then from there, I kind of found your show, and, you know, eventually I found myself, you know, listening to the other stuff on the Horn. So, I guess that's where I'm at. Like, without the Horn, I think I'd be back where I was in that place at that time. I would just have to go insane. I would just have to get fitted for a straitjacket and
get the little purple crayon between your toes and start writing on the rubber walls.
And that would be the end of it. So, so I'm very appreciative. So, you know, I've got this $150. I'm ready to split it three ways between the Horn, the White Rose, and Guy. And all I'm asking, which I think is a really humble thing to ask of the audience, is just to please, can we get 10 people, at least half of which are new contributors? And that would be great. Just put in $5 to kick off the fifth year and to keep the Horn rolling. And hell, you know, let's do more than 10. Let's get 100 people to contribute. Let's get 1,000 people to contribute. And
there's number four.
Cool. But that's all I'm asking is, like, you know, do people appreciate the Horn enough just to put in $5 for the birthday? That's all. It's not some kind of brilliant idea. It's just a question I want to ask people. If you're listening on a rerun or a podcast, I'm talking to you too. You know, especially if you're a single guy like me, if you've got a job, if you don't really have any dependents or anything, and you're going to spend $5 on something stupid this weekend, you know.
Let us be the stupid thing you spend $5 on.
I'm gonna let it go at that. I can't put it any better than that, Bob. So.
Michael, thank you so much, my friend.
Let the horn be the stupid thing you spend your $5 on this weekend. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. All right. You have a good birthday.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
All right. Happy birthday to the Horn, Bob.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
And never mind with the hour two intro or the breakster or whatever. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes, Maura.
Maura, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm calling because Michael had such a good idea that I am willing to match the first $250 that's donated in honor of our birthday.
Holy mackerel.
So, folks, open up your wallets. This is a very, very important endeavor that we keep the horn alive. And that's, you know, I wish I could do more.
Maura, you do, my dear, you do a ton. You do a ton. And, I don't talk a lot about who does what, but you've stood there with us for a long time, and you deserve to be acknowledged for that.
Well, the horn is part of my family. So, folks, get those contributions in. We're family. We depend on one another. And you want to know how I found the horn, Bob?
Yes, please.
And it's going to make me sound like a real elitist. I saw on the internet, I guess, something to do with the horn that said Southern Liberal. Now, in several reincarnations of jobs back, I had to work down in the South on an ongoing basis, traveling here and there. And I did not have exactly good experiences in the South. So I couldn't imagine a Southern Liberal. I kind of had my nose up in the air. But I tuned in, and damn, didn't I get hooked. And my whole perception of the South changed, and I thank you for that.
Oh, Maura, that's beautiful. And you know, that really is part of the purpose here, is to let people know that folks that talk like me and Juanita and Luke some others, you know, that we're not, well, that the so-called solid South isn't nearly as solid as some would. It's got cracks, and we can break it wide open. And I think we are. We're in the process of doing that. You know, that when you've got Alan Grayson taking a congressman, for God's sakes, from Georgia out to the woodshed and actually teaching him what's in the Constitution.
Oh, that was beautiful.
It was. And, you know, because Southern, you know, we are often portrayed as slow, dim-witted, finagling, conniving, shiftless.
Right.
But we don't take kindly to being thought ignorant. And when somebody like Paul Brown steps out there and proves his own ignorance, we don't approve of that. So, you know, it's possible that, you know, somewhere down the road, that man can be replaced by someone with a Southern brain.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
Indeed.
The horn is so important on so many levels and for so many reasons. It's our responsibility to keep you going.
Well,
you make such a difference in the lives of so many people.
And Michael's challenge is coming along nicely. The 5th and the 6th just rolled in.
Great.
So it may not.
I'm worthy of a challenge too.
Exactly. So I will let you know, and we'll give it to the end of the weekend, okay?
Oh, you can give it till next Friday, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. We'll give it till next Friday and make it the birthday week.
Perfect.
All right. Maura, it is so good to hear from you, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I hope you're feeling a little better.
I'm feeling a lot better. Thanks, Bob.
Good.
You take care now.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I'm sitting here with chills, and that is no exaggeration. If all of this happens as it has been envisioned by both Michael and Maura, we will close the month of October actually having met, for the first time in a long time, our monthly goal. And what a wonder that will be. What a wonder that will be. Onward we go. A couple of lines open if you want to get in on the conversation. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And there's number 8. Wow. Wow. And, hey, welcome to the program.
Next on our very special Horn Memories.
Hey, David, what's up?
You know, you said this is going to make, this is going to jump back a little bit, what you said about humping the equipment. I didn't know you guys were in a Jimi Hendrix cover band, but...
Oh, well, like I said, you know, 16-hour days. You know,
yeah, I know. Well, those orgies are very long, hey, but anyways.
You know, a couple of guys carrying around mixers and gig bags full of wires and, you know, looking dazed and confused.
You know, you might want to consider the house music market, Bob. Just a thought.
Well, yeah, in some of that abundant spare time, yes.
I think Peter Goggle could steer you in the right direction on how to get the proper startup and the right DJ connects. Just another thought if you want to decide. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I have been known to DJ a little bit, but it's been a long time.
Oh, that's good.
There's a photo that runs in the chat room periodically of me as a little baby disc jockey a long, long time ago. And
try to pay for your new laser rig.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, have you... you remind me of something, David, because a couple of days back, Bart Kopp over at BartKopp.com filed his trip report of going from having gone, he and Mrs. Bart... having gone to see the fabulous new U2 show, and they went to Norman, Oklahoma, because he's an Okie.
Right.
And his trip reports are wonderful, but that one struck me as one of his best in a long time. And it's worth the read, but yeah, I want one of those shape shifting video screens like what U2's got on tour.
You know, the best thing I heard. This is the best gig I heard. I don't know who does it, but they tour all around the. They tour around all around the U.S. I don't know if they come to West Virginia. But some guy puts on a laser light show with Pink Floyd music.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who it is. I just know, you know, we advertise Pink Floyd laser light show.
It is all over the country, and I've seen it from time to time advertised, and they do a lot of that stuff in planetariums, too.
Right. Before I get into... opening up what it is I call the talk about, mainly the drive, the fun drive, and trying to get people on board for this Christmas. Because, Bob, I plan on going. You don't want to know how many hours I plan on going. It's going to be ridiculous. First thing I would say is I'll give you guys my horn memory, how I discovered you. I don't know if you know this, Bob, but I'll say it. I was listening to a telethon for calling in for a veto of a Supreme Judge. Was it?
Oh yeah, the Alito filibuster.
The Alito filibuster, right? And I remember I heard you subbed in, and that's what made me. For those people who don't know, I've been calling since early 2006.
Yeah,
it has been that long.
Yeah.
And the first call I did was something so totally unlike me, which was I called in and I said that if America is going to continue to squander its resources and continue to spend like no tomorrow and continue to print invisible money, then eventually we're going to have to go to an eco-village format for a lot of places in the United States. And I'm starting to see the seams in the tears right now, and I still think that a lot of people are going to have to make that tough choice if they want to live here. So that's how I discovered the horn, and that was my first introductory call, and I've been calling in ever since. I think I've taken a one-month break, but pretty much a regular caller.
And about 4.5 years, about as long as we've been at this.
About that, yeah. And I just want to say something, and I want to go with what Michael was saying. We do have people on board, but I want people to understand that if you've ever wanted to get into fundraising, and if you think you can't do it, but let me assure you, you can do it, And Bob, I'll tell you this. If I were to get 10 people to follow me in the same footsteps that I'm doing right now, I guarantee you, or not guarantee, but I'm pretty much sure, that we could meet your monthly expenses. But my idea is going to a different area of strategy, which I think is really important to think about. And I've been thinking about it for a while. Everybody needs a buffer. So I'm thinking of creating like a separate channel, and when I really start going, kind of like a buffer fund. So this buffer will be for when everything goes to hell. And this is why a lot of liberals have to understand this. People need to start thinking about the worst scenario, and then you need to start planning for the worst scenario when it comes to something like that. And then when you have like a wake-up call like that, that's your alert sign, and it's kind of like, well, basically I said I'm going to kick down the door here, and I'm going to just destroy this debt. And that's pretty much going to be my goal this Christmas, to destroy the debt of the horn. And with a few people, this is why I say this. I don't know how much you're going to make this Christmas. I have no idea, but I know this. If people were to email me at hornauction@gmail.com and find out how to get started doing fundraising on eBay auctions, and how to get the right keywords, the right strategy, just how to get started so you hit that right stream of people, of traffic, of momentum, I guarantee you that you're going to be surprised with your results. You're going to bring in more money than you ever thought you ever could to the horn. And that's why for people who are really ambitious, these are the ambitious people, I'm calling out a clarion call to you. If you do have some of those extra funds and you do want to roll with me, now keep in mind, you're not going to be at a level that you're seeing that I'm at. But if you keep at that momentum of doing a certain amount a day and you pace yourself, you're going to provide something that you never thought you could provide. And I can clearly say that you will be helping create. So when the horn does have that disastrous day, because you have to think like that. You have to think like that. When the horn does have that disastrous day, you have that buffer channel where you can pick up that extra funds and turn the lights back on.
Hear, hear. Because, to be honest, we're not, you know, we're never very far from that, David.
Right, right.
You know, we stay, just because of the way billing works and the way funding has worked, we stay about a month behind on the technology bill. And that's because they bill a month in advance, understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, if that ever gets any worse, then we're in real trouble. It would be nice to get back even, but that hasn't been able to happen yet.
I just want to say one thing. I have a quote that I'm going to leave you with in a second, because I know other people want to talk. And I did just use my satellite jammer communicator to get on here to be able to jump ahead of the line. I just basically dropped all calls as well. Sorry about that.
Oh, well, yeah. Yes.
So this is a quote from a book, and then I'll tell you who said it, and I think you'll be very impressed, and I think this is going to inspire you, Bob, in a way that I hope will resonate with you, and I hope your family's listening, and I hope people understand that you can never judge a book by its cover. Holy cow, how corny is that? But anyways...
A little bit, but, you
know,
we'll cut
you
some slack.
I know. Just as long as you don't start playing Kenny Rogers through the years, we'll be okay.
Oh, you evil, evil man.
Yeah. A few months after the funeral, my father, at the age of 59, will be facing his own mortality. I have no doubt that he loved my mother to the end. Her death had foreshadowed and signaled his own. He had been in and out of hospital all year. The cancer, which had begun in his prostate, has spread upward to his kidneys. Specialists, surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy have all proved fruitless. He has now been committed to a hospice for the days that remain to him. I'm led into a room there with a single cot against the wall where a crucifix hangs. I haven't seen him in a number of months, and on the bed is a man I do not recognize. I imagine for a moment that they have put me in the wrong room, but the skeleton below me is my father, watching me with the bleak, staring eyes of a starving child. The kind nurse who brought me in quietly pulls up a chair. "Here's your famous son come to see you, Ernie," she says. "Oh, I?" I try to compose myself. Part of me wants to run out of the room like a frightened boy. "Hello, Dad. I'm going to leave you two alone now. I'm sure you have a lot to talk about," says the nurse. Then she leaves us. I have no idea what to say, so I take his hand in mine and gently massage the soft triangle of flesh between his thumb and his first finger. I haven't held his hand since I was small. They're big, square hands, massively knuckled with strong, muscular fingers, deeply lined and grooved. My father's hands are not the delicate, expressive hands of an artist, but they have a kind of elegance, and so close to death they possess an honest and translucent beauty. They are the hands of a woman.
Wow. Who?
That people is from Sting's autobiography, Broken Music. And if you ever want a piece of inspiration, and whatever anyone says or wants to think about the image of a rock star, I urge you to read this book. Because if you think this guy knows hard times, his dad was a milkman, he grew up in Newcastle, talks about throwing everything away to follow his dream. Everyone said he was crazy. But the police, if you can imagine this, Bob, nobody does this. The police went to the United States without even having a record out. And they took on the world. Even with those doubts, Sting had to leave his band and his bandmates, who looked at him in scorn because he was in a punk band. What I'm saying is sometimes, people, trailblazing is the hard thing to do. But when it all comes down to it, what you get on that trail, like Scott from Salem is doing with Make the Path,
yep,
what a lot of people are doing, it's all worth it.
Indeed. Indeed.
And Bob, with that, I leave you to your next caller, and I hope people think about it. And if you guys want to get in touch with me, I'll plug myself again, hornauction@gmail.com, and we'll get you started. If money is an issue, people, now, who the hell does this? If money is an issue, get back to me in a month, and we'll find you, we'll get you on the ground floor running if you want to be a fundraiser. We'll get it going. And before I go, if people want to check out that book, it's called Broken Music, and all you have to do is search for Sting. It's on Amazon. It's a powerful read. You should read it if you're ever having those doubts of your broken dreams. You can pick it up, and you can be whatever it is you envision.
Indeed. Thank you very much, David.
Later, Bob.
Later. Bye now. From Maine, some inspiring words from our good, longtime friend, David. This is the fourth birthday of the horn. It is something very special. And toward that end, share your thoughts, if you wish. You are more than welcome to do so. And there's a bunch of other, you know, there's a bunch of stories out there to do today as well. Because, and last night was the end of the middle school football season. Won't be missing any more Thursdays. We'll be live Thursday from Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact. Um, but that's why I was gone last night. I'm sorry I didn't tell you about it on Wednesday, but I didn't realize it until Agnes told me Thursday morning. So that's why I was gone last night. I wasn't sick last night, too. Maybe it was being out in the damp night air. I don't know. It's got me feeling kind of creepy today. But at any rate, we're here for tonight. And let's make the best of it. And we'll take a little break. Because I wasn't here last night, I didn't get to run last night's Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So I do believe we'll also take a run at that. And based on Ken's story from Springfield, Virginia, and the tune I was quoting at the time, let's do a little time travel with Ray Stevens. And we'll come back with your phone calls. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. They all ring the same way in the same phone. Use it as you see fit. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Thank you to all of you who are lining up to answer Michael's challenge. And, yeah, there's Ray. I'd forgotten it was a cold opening. So let's try this again. You know, hey, we do this on the fly. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Hello, everyone. This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation on the scene at the supermarket. There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I did. I was standing over by the tomatoes, and here he come, running through the pole beans, through the fruits and vegetables, naked as a jaybird. And I hollered over to Ethel. I said, "Don't look, Ethel." And it's too late. She'd already been in since.
Here he comes.
Boogie-dee, boogie-dee.
There he goes.
Boogie-dee, boogie-dee.
Oh, yes, they call him the street. Look at that.
Fastest thing on 2 feet.
Look at that.
He's just as proud as he can be. His anatomy, he gonna give us a peek. Oh, yes, they call him the street.
Look at that.
He likes to show off his physique.
Look at that.
If there's an audience to be found, he'll be speaking it round, inviting public critique.
Your Action News reporter once again, and we're here at the gas station. Pardon me, sir, did you see what happened?
Yeah, see, I was just in here getting my car checked, and he disappeared out of the fence. Come streaking around the grease right there. Didn't have nothing on but a smock. I looked in there, and Ethel was getting her cold right. I hollered, "Don't look, Ethel!" And it's too late. She'd already been mooned. Flash, right there in front of the shop or something.
Reporter in the booth at the gym covering the disturbance at the basketball playoff. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, see. Hey, Tom, I was just going down there to get Ethel a snow cone. Here he come, right out of the cheap seats. Dribbling. Right down the middle of the court. Didn't have on nothing but his tee-in. Made a hook shot and got out through the concession stand. I hollered up at Ethel. I said, "Don't look, Ethel!" Too late. She'd already got a free shot. Grand second, right there in front of the home table.
What if they call him the street?
Here he comes again. Who's that? Where's that? Ethel,
is that you, Ethel? What do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
Preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, October 22, 2009.
Aspen's dying in the West. Republicans dying on the energy vine. Plus, Rush Limbaugh calls for the death of a New York Times columnist.
Oh, brother, all of that and more. Straight ahead, I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and snarky comment.
I think these militant environmentalists, these wackos, have so much in common with the jihad guys.
Yeah, we do, Rush. We both think you're f***ing crazy. This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us. You've heard our reports on the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's shameless assault on climate change legislation. Now it's your turn to push back. Please go to StopTheChamber.com and sign the VR petition demanding an investigation and accountability for the Chamber's irresponsible behavior. Sign on at StopTheChamber.com. Your support is needed today. Okay, Des, we will get to our good friend, Rush Limbaugh, in a moment. But first, these Green News headlines.
Aspen trees in the Rocky Mountains are dying in alarming numbers this year, and scientists don't know why. Forestry experts say the iconic tree of the West appears to be the victim of a mysterious condition killing millions of aspens from Arizona to Canada. A recent aerial survey estimated nearly 20% of aspens are dead in Colorado alone.
And there's no explanation?
Well, scientists believe it could be a combination of factors brought on by persistent drought and warmer winter temperatures, which are also blamed for the massive pine beetle infestation that's killed millions of evergreens over the last decade.
Yeah, and if you drive through Colorado, you can really see the death of all these brown trees everywhere you look.
This morning, South Carolina's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, under some attack from the right for signaling he might be willing to work with Senate Democrats on climate and clean energy legislation, told Fox News he won't vote for a climate bill unless it has the same old energy policies Republicans have been pushing for decades.
Remember this drill here, drill now? Well, there will be no climate change bill with my vote unless you have offshore oil and drilling. I won't vote for any climate change bill that doesn't allow a dramatic increase in nuclear power. I'm not going to vote for any climate change bill that doesn't allow us to use our coal deposits.
Well, that's the same...
Same old.
That's change you can believe in. I guess he didn't get the November memo, that Lindsey Graham.
Graham went on to call again for 100 new nuclear plants to be built in 30 years and added, quote, we need to use the coal that God has given us.
Now, that's the same call that John McCain made last year, his 100 nuclear plants. It was rejected then. What makes Lindsey Graham think it's going to work now?
I don't know. Nuclear is pretty much the most expensive way to boil water that there is.
And dangerous, too. I'm not sure what he's thinking, but when he came out with that op-ed along with John Kerry in the New York Times a week or so ago, I knew it wasn't going to go very far. I suspect it won't.
Well, perhaps Senator Graham needs to walk over to the National Mall, where the winners of the 2009 Solar Decathlon are on display demonstrating the clean energy economy. The Solar Decathlon brings together 20 teams from universities all over the world to compete for the best all-solar-powered home. Second and third place went to teams from Illinois and California, but first prize went to Team Germany, whose solar home was so efficient it actually produced more energy than it used even during 3 days of rain.
Well, and really?
Yes,
and
the German students used mini solar panels installed on both the roof and the exterior walls of their building.
And we're talking about when these houses are built that they do produce more energy than they use.
the homeowners get to sell it back to the energy company, get to make money from it.
Yes. Now, using the same concept of homeowners selling energy back to the electric utility, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed into law ambitious new solar incentives for California that will allow owners of small solar systems to sell energy back to their local electric utility. As you heard in Brad's opening snarky comment, Rush Limbaugh compared environmentalists to jihadists. Limbaugh was responding to a New York Times columnist, Andrew Revkin, who discussed the impact of population on the environment and went on to call for the Times reporter to kill himself.
This guy from the New York Times, if he really thinks that humanity is destroying the planet, humanity is destroying the climate, that human beings in their natural existence are going to cause the extinction of life on Earth, Mr. Revkin, why don't you just go kill yourself and help the planet by dying?
Good God. Unbelievable.
Well, first off, Limbaugh was relying on an editorial from Investor's Business Daily that misrepresented a quote from Andrew Revkin. He's a very well-respected environmental journalist. Revkin was referring to studies that suggest that simply providing family planning services in developing countries can also help reduce emissions because fewer children mean less consumption means lower emissions.
And did Revkin say that human beings themselves will cause the extinction of humanity?
No, he didn't say that at all.
Rush Limbaugh making stuff up, I don't believe.
Revkin said the reality of explosive population growth in sub-Saharan Africa could be addressed by simply providing access to birth control for women who want it but can't get it. And finally, you can make Rush mad by getting your green on this Saturday with the International Day of Climate Action. On Saturday, people in thousands of communities all around the world will come together in rallies and demonstrations to demand a strong treaty at the UN climate negotiations in Copenhagen in December. Check out events in your area by going to 350.org. That's 350.org.
Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Come on, keep it now. Smile on your brother, everybody get together. Try to love one another right now.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
About 21 minutes before the hour, a little over halfway done with the program for this evening. And just to sort of close a loop, you heard in Brad and Desi's Green News Report the Rush Limbaugh, why doesn't he kill himself comment?
Yeah.
You know, and the comparison between environmentalists and violent jihadis, you heard that too?
Yeah.
Check. Well, just to give you an idea how effective the Republicans are at getting their message out, let me tell you where that started. It started a couple of weeks ago, and it started right here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. I kid you not. Steve Walker, a thug who runs something called Walker Caterpillar Machinery, a huge caterpillar dealer down in Charleston, West Virginia, and a huge proponent of blowing up every last mountain in this state, stated that there was no difference between a kid who unfurls a banner in protest of mountain removal and a suicide bomber in the Middle East. Really, there's no difference to him. There's no difference to Steve Walker of Walker Cat Machinery between someone who commits suicide
in order to kill other people, and a nonviolent, peaceful protester of a horrific environmental disaster taking place in Appalachia. There's no difference to Steve Walker. Now, in a very short period of time, boom, there goes Rush Limbaugh, and he's got it in his hand. There's no difference between so-called environmentalists, a term which I largely reject because it is not an environmental issue, it is a human rights issue. All environmental issues are human rights issues. But Rush saying that there's no difference between an environmentalist and a jihadi. And then, of course, there's the underlying meaning of that Arabic word in its own right, which does not mean people blowing themselves up. A jihad, as I understand the meaning, also refers to the internal struggle, which is a natural part and process of an enlightened human life, in which we struggle with ourselves to become, regardless of the religious structure in question, but in which human beings struggle to become better human beings. Just thought you might like to know that. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is Bob Kincaid.
This is.
Bob, my name's Andy.
Hey, Andy.
Never been on your show before.
No, I didn't think so. Welcome.
You're welcome. You have a great show.
Thank you.
I've emailed you a few times.
Yes.
Hey, you were talking about Acorn.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the show, and I've followed Acorn for a long time. I'm actually an analyst, and I covered mortgage companies and banks. And people have to understand that Acorn has played a great role in trying to stop the subprime housing crisis.
You're absolutely right.
Long before it was on the radar screen, you know, of anybody. In 1999, they started going after Household Finance Co. and Beneficial Finance. They used to be owned by Household International.
Right.
Because these guys were just pushing these mortgages on people that couldn't nearly make the payment, especially older people, people that were, sick or didn't have the wherewithal to make good decisions. And these policies were fraudulent. There's a guy named William F. Aldinger, who was head of household at the time. This guy was so driven to make money that he had the stock price that he wanted to hit, which was $100 for Household International, on his car. That's how driven he was. So he pushed these mortgage brokers to push these policies. And finally, Acorn was successful in 2002 in getting a $440 million settlement out of them to try to help homeowners all around the country get out of the mortgages that were in. This was done like by 34 state attorney general. But still, even with that happening, you know, the subprime still went on with Robert Rubin and Greenspan and Larry Summers, who of course is in there now with one of my bigger disappointments, Mr. Obama. But here you have these guys berating Acorn, and you have the Democratic Party just leaving these guys to the wind. And what they tried to do was stop the subprime crisis before it ever got over. They also went after AmeriQuest. And in 2006, they got a $350 million settlement after AmeriQuest. And also the household settlement was the largest settlement of its time, up to that point in time, of any company. So for these Democrats to just leave these people at Acorn stranded like that, I mean, they are such cowards. I just find
yes.
it totally unconscionable.
It is, Andy, and it is. That's what made me so proud of Representative Grayson, and I'm proud. I'm really, really proud of the stands that he's. You know, he's apparently afraid of nothing and no one.
Isn't it great?
It's beautiful. I hope it's highly contagious among the Democrats in Congress. I fear it won't be.
I was in the office a few weeks ago, and I just said, is this the hero? Is this the number of the hero? Where do I send the money?
Yeah, and you, that's got to be gratifying inside his office, too. Because for people who are unabashedly liberal, it's been a bit of a wilderness, hasn't it?
Yeah, bring back John F. Kennedy, right?
Yeah.
Guy that wasn't afraid to be a liberal and to say it.
And Acorn has done, and they're continuing to try to do, very, very good work, especially, as you note, Andy, with the mortgage crisis.
Right.
They have saved a lot of people's homes. But I heard an interview with someone from Acorn, I think, in Philly the other day, saying, you know, we're not able to help like we used to be able to help.
And they don't have the money.
Right. And, of course, you know, don't...
The legal team matched up.
Yeah, don't think for an instant that the Republican Party wouldn't like to see them have even less, because for reasons that I can't fathom, Andy, they like to see human suffering. And,
well, I can fathom why they like to go after Acorn, because Acorn is a definite thorn in their side when it comes to signing up voters. Because those people they sign up, they're not voting for Republicans.
No. But the part I can't fathom is why Republicans like to see human misery, as if it was some sort of character building exercise or something like that.
You know, I don't understand it either. I got two. State Assemblyman. I'm in New Jersey. And both of these people wrote me back because I've been pushing universal single-payer health care big. And both of these Republicans wrote me back. Actually, there were three of them, all signed the same letter, saying our health care system is fine. We don't need any changes. Well, you son of a bee. You know, I lost a job a few years ago. I needed some health care in between jobs. I could not get it because I had a pre-existing condition. What the hell good does this system do me if I can't buy health care? I mean, I'm dead in the water. It's a totally broken system. So what good does it do me with a pre-existing condition, and what if something were to happen if I got cancer or I got into a car accident or something? I mean, you're done for life. You'd be paying off your debts for life. It's just insanity. I don't get... And, you're right. That Representative Grayson hit it right on the nose. Okay? Don't get sick. If you do, die quickly. Right?
Yeah. Because, and that's, you know, that's one of the more pernicious effects of our healthcare system as it presently is constituted. It doesn't just torment the sick person. It takes others with it. If you're one of those people who dies lingeringly, then you may rest, and I won't call it rest, you may be well assured that the torment will continue for those you leave behind. And again, it's unconscionable. I don't know why, and maybe we are beginning to have some success, but I don't know why it's so difficult for the American people to comprehend that doing that to, you know, after what, Andy, 25, 30 years of this constant prating and prattling about family values, why can they not comprehend that it is unconscionable to do that kind of thing to families?
Well, you know what kills me is this whole health care debate has gone back since the beginning of a Revolutionary War. Benjamin Rush, who was from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and all that, one of the forefathers, was a doctor.
Yes.
He wanted health care in the Constitution, and so did Thomas Paine. They wanted health care written right in, that it's a right, and it didn't happen then. Then you have Teddy Roosevelt, who wasn't even a Democrat, was, of course, a progressive Republican, in 1906, was pushing very hard to get health care as a right for every human being in this country. And this is something that, and a number of countries in Europe already have this right in their constitution. Spain, I know, does indeed have that right in their constitution, that everybody will get health care. The same as every, nobody will be discriminated against when it comes to health care. No rich or poor, no matter who you are, whatever skin color you are, Spain, you will get health care. The same as everybody else. But not here. Here, you die. Or you go bankrupt.
Or both.
Right.
Hey, I love that piece with Al Franken.
Oh, wasn't that just beautiful?
Oh, God, I love that.
And
the husband looked like such a fool.
Oh, yeah. What was her name?
Saying that people are going to go more bankrupt if we get the government-sponsored option. I don't know what her name was, but she had that strong British accent.
Her name was... It was hyphenated, and it was like Rochgut Roth.
Right, right.
And you know, just that there's a... Maura used the word elitist a little bit ago. The elitism, because that's the second person with an upper-crust British accent that the Hudson Institute has sent there, because it was another Hudson Institute individual making very similar arguments that Dennis Kucinich peeled like a grape on the House side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero bankruptcies in Switzerland. Zero bankruptcies in Germany. Zero in France. And she was so... You're so arrogant when she even answered. Oh, I'll bet you do have the answer to that, Mr. Frank.
Yeah, the condescension was simply sickening.
You know, I spent some time in Europe. I went to school like 15 years ago. I got an opportunity after the wall went down in Eastern Europe. I got to go to a place called Vysoké School of Economics, and I got to take some classes at the Prague School of Economics. In Prague, Czechoslovakia, then Czech Republic, then. And in there they had one class that I took, which was the capitalist system, and it really broke down to the Anglo system versus the Germanic economic system. It's something, you know, I have a finance and an economic business background here. You never really get that drilled in, but there, they have it drilled in that there is a Germanic way of having a society, and there is an Anglo-Saxon way. And of course, the Anglo-Saxon way is much more, you're on your own, baby. You know, you take care of yourself. And the Germanic way is we're a society, and everybody sticks together, and you pool your resources, and you help each other out. And that we are so dear to latching on to the British system, this Anglo system, and it's just so harsh on people that don't have needs. That it always just, you know, tears me up to see, why can't we go to this more better system, even a little, even if we go just a little way towards this Germanic system, more socialist system? Jesus.
Well, you know, and
the common good is what we are falling behind on in this country.
Right, the common weal.
Right.
You know, that's a word, wheel. We don't even use wheel anymore, but it was certainly a hot topic among Dr. Rush and those others that you mentioned a few minutes ago. And let's remember that steps taken that wind up being social goods are often taken with the most they're taken with an understanding that it benefits the rich as much as the poor. It was Germany who instituted the first workers' compensation system in the late 19th century, was it not?
At Bismarck?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they had the first pension system.
Exactly. And that was done, you know, not because of anybody feeling particularly warm and fuzzy about the poor or the injured workers, but because there is an overall social benefit to capital of having workers who are capable of producing. You know, and by the time it gets to the United States, Boss Man Wayne, could lay this out a lot more clearly. Workers' compensation was set up as a protective device for business. Because the foundation of workers' compensation is that if a worker accepts workers' comp because of an on-the-job injury, he is therefore precluded from suing his employer.
That's kind of nice.
It worked out great for business.
I think it's great, too, that if we ever could get a single-payer system in place, it does away with workers' comp completely. We don't have to worry about the insurance companies picking up the tab on that.
Exactly. And you know, to take it a step further, And I've argued this on a number of occasions, and I think you might agree, when American business wakes up and realizes that part of the reason it's getting its butt kicked all around the globe is because other companies in other countries don't have to factor in health care, we'll have universal single payer.
Yeah, it makes us totally uncompetitive with the rest of the world. Totally. And you know what? It really kills entrepreneurship and small business. If you have any inkling that you're not going to be able to get health care if you go off on your own or you have some kind of a condition that you have to take care of, geez, what a disincentive to starting a business or to going off and taking the risk of doing that. And even a smaller business doesn't have the ability to get the group health plan. I mean, totally, our system is geared for the big, mega, international corporation. It is not geared anymore for innovation and entrepreneurship. Not with the way this health system is set up. And I don't know why the Republicans can't get that through their head. They love competition. They love entrepreneurship. They love these startup companies and all this innovation. But you can't have that with this kind of healthcare system. It just kills it.
Well, but do they really, Andy?
I mean, I don't think they do really.
Because, you know, all these startups that become...
They talk a good game.
Yeah, all these startups that then become successful, what happens to them immediately? They are immediately absorbed like some sort of Star Trek Borg thing into a larger corporate entity, which then sucks all the life and all the profits out of them.
Right.
What the Republican, you know, for all their talk about supporting small business and being, out there for the small business person, that's all it is talk. Because you're exactly right. Everything that they do is contrary to being able to start a small business, run a small business, and make a small business competitive or even successful. You know, you're absolutely right. Imagine any enterprise that starts up and doesn't have to factor in workers' compensation and unemployment compensation and health care. How much easier is that? It's manifestly more easy.
Absolutely.
But instead, these concepts like workers' comp have been turned on their ear. We had a fairly successful state-run workers' compensation system in this state, Andy, for years. But then a Republican governor, one of the most corrupt individual who's ever been governor of this state, used it as a payoff vehicle for his big corporate coal clients. And broke it. And then the so-called Democratic governor that we have now privatized it and turned it into a profit vehicle. And workers' compensation premiums went through the roof.
Wow. Wow, there's probably some payoff there, too.
Oh, great. Heavenly days. It's been payoff all over the place.
Right, because now they're competitive with the state-run-owned company. I know in California, because the state-run company's premiums are usually better than the private workers' comp. A lot of the private workers' comp don't even want to touch some states anyway because of the risk that they have. The California workers' comp has just grown and grown and grown, and the employers seem to like it better.
Well, one of these days we'll wise up and fix it. But your point cannot be overemphasized that if we get universal single-payer health care, it's by the boards. It is a non-issue for employers anymore.
Right. Right. Small businessmen should be jumping all over this. They really should. They weren't ideologues, but they're indoctrinated into the Republican privatization way of thinking. Now, there's so many places where privatization, I think, is just totally failed. We've got a governor here, this guy Corzine, who's running again, who probably because we have no other choice, will probably win as governor. But, man, this guy being the CEO of Goldman Sachs, it's in his blood to privatize. That's always his first thought, privatization. And he tried to privatize our highways, turnpikes, Garden State. He's tried to privatize. He even has some public radio stations. He tried to privatize that to make money for the state. He tried to privatize what else they have state parks here, concessions, you know, some of the state park facilities, privatize that. I mean, people stop them in most of these little ventures he tried. But this guy's a Democrat, too. It's a shame. I think it's like things like title insurance also. The state of Iowa is the only state, I think, in the country that the state does the title insurance. You can't get a private title insurance. And it has the lowest title insurance fees in the country by far and away.
Well, you know, imagine that.
Try to do that. Yeah.
But see, there's all that there. But there's all that money sitting around, Andy, not doing anything for any corporatists.
Isn't it a shame?
You know, and the business about entrepreneurs. Here's another example of why Republicans don't really support, as they say they do, this idea of entrepreneurship. Look at climate change legislation and green energy legislation. They are against it, hammer and tongs. The Republican Party, of course. You know, if you heard Brad and Desi's report, and what Lindsey Graham said, you know, I won't support no climate bill that don't have no nuclear and coal in it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's that? Well, that's just the old energy policy. But if you think, you know, I think there's a general consensus, isn't there, that the few, that part of America's hope for its business future in the coming in the century at hand lies in our ability to innovate in terms of alternative energy sources. And yet these Republicans, they can't work hard enough to defeat that very notion.
Right.
Because what they support is rapid acquisition, instantaneous gratification via profit, and hence, you know, you get something like mountaintop removal.
Right.
Which is not about the extraction of coal. It's about the extraction of profit with the greatest speed possible. You know, Massey Energy claims to, they went years and years without being able to declare a quarterly profit. Now, you with a business background, what other corporation would continue to be financed on that basis? I'm talking about, you know, 10, 12 quarters couldn't declare so much as a penny dividend. And yet there was America's banking infrastructure writing check after check after check to finance the blowing up of Appalachia. You know, they say they operate on a very thin profit margin, but on the other hand, the guy that kept losing money over all those years, Don Blankenship, kept getting raises. You know, the man's a damn billionaire by now. And when it comes to, you know, when it comes time for them to put up some sort of a PR front, they dropped $1 million on a concert on a blown up mountain that featured, for God's sakes, Ted Nugent, Sean Hannity, and Hank Williams Jr.
Right.
Where's the fiscal sense in any of that?
The usual suspects. A right-wing politics right there.
Yeah.
In the entertainment industry.
On the other hand, however, if we start, you know, there's real growth potential, and it's been identified, and the numbers have been put out there by organizations like the Alliance for American Manufacturing, that is strongly supported by the Steelworkers Union, that America can rebuild its industrial base in a clean and green fashion by investing in clean energy solutions.
Well, one thing that might be interesting for New Jersey is a guy running as independent candidate for governor named Chris Daggett, and he used to be the environmental department head here for the state of New Jersey under a different governor, Governor Kane, and he's got a very, very strong environmental record. And believe it or not, New Jersey is the number two state in the country as far as the solar power goes, the usage of solar power. Surprises me because I don't really even see it, but evidently they've done very well in trying to get solar power going. And he seems to be he would really push hard if he got in there to try to get these alternative sources of energy going. But it's unlikely that he would win the governorship. he says he's got 20% of the vote now in the polling count, but I doubt that he did. But there are moves here, and certainly you would think the wind power off the coast, off the ocean, would be just something. I live close to the ocean myself. You would think just harnessing that would be a great source of energy. And the Europeans have gotten such a head start now. I think Denmark gets like 50% of its power from clean energy now.
Yeah, and they're on a track to be completely green in 20 years.
Yeah.
But that's little Denmark. You know, Brazil is on the same track, and they're huge.
Right.
But, you know, meanwhile, we're still stuck in the, literally, in the Stone Age.
Stuck in the wind. We're the Neanderthals.
Yeah, and what happened to them, Andy?
Yes, that very well could happen to this country. We do have a problem. The problem is we got Republicans. As you would say, the Republicans. And those Republicans do the greatest job of obstructing and stopping, and then they got their echo chamber of the news media that has been totally screwed up, that keeps on pumping into people that, you know, this whole energy problem and the whole CO2, greenhouse gases, just does not exist, you know. And it is such a shame. The rest of the world is so much more clued in to the reality of this situation. And here we just do not have the media on our side. And the Republicans do.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I don't necessarily want a media that's on our side. I want a media that's on nobody's side.
The truth would be nice.
Yeah, facts. I'm just crazy for facts.
Right.
But, you know,
I mean, let's just have somebody give us the straight facts and stop with this BS.
As is my usual practice, I made a flyby of CNN's top headlines. I don't think you can do this enough just to point out what they're saying is news. Check this out, Andy. Their number one headline: documents. Wife says balloon dad plotted hoax. Must watch video. Sad polar bear gets a new home. Reporter sinks her teeth into 7 patty test. And you got to go down 5 stories before you get to one that's actually newsy. Namely, and to wit, bank failures rise past 100 for 2009. That's news.
There was some relevance, yeah. Ted Turner must really be kicking himself in the rear end for what he did that network.
Yeah, they kind of gave him they made him an offer he couldn't refuse. I don't think there were horses' heads in beds, but, you know, it was close enough.
Yeah, they gave him a great package. No, beyond anybody's wildest dreams. But, gee, what he sold off was a piece of America.
Well, what he sold off was something that he sold off his vision, and the vision was a good one. The vision was the right one. But as usual, it becomes a case of a brilliant vision being perverted, which seems to be one of our greatest talents in this country, sad to say.
So true. When the corporatocracy gets a hold of it, when it becomes a money-making enterprise, that's what happens. Just like you're saying, everything becomes commercialized, it becomes entertainment, it becomes how can we get the most people to watch, even though these people might be dumber than, rocks. How can we get the most audience and dumb it down? Right?
Well, you know, stupid is more manipulable than intelligence, isn't it, Andy?
That's the success of the Republican Party right there.
Oh, right some, there. You know, if you could...
cranking out the big lie. Just keep cranking it out.
And sooner or later it becomes the truth.
Absolutely.
Family values.
Yeah.
Andy, it's great talking to you. Don't be a stranger. Feel free to call in any time, okay?
Yeah, I've tried to get through a few times, but had no luck. But I'll get through again, man.
All right, great.
Great job.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You take care of yourself.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
From New Jersey, first-time caller Andy. We've exchanged some emails, and a lot of truth in that last conversation, as is so often the case here on the Horn. Something to mention to you real quick, like Texas Betsy, our blogger, wants to kick in on Michael's offer. You recall Michael said that he would basically triple contributions if we got 10 $5 contributions between now and the end of the weekend, and we're at 9. He said that he would triple it and give $50 to the Horn, $50 to Guy James, and $50 to the White Rose Society. Texas Betsy, our blogger, has joined in on that and said she will also give $25 to Guy, the Horn, and Ben if we get 5 new contributors this weekend. And then there's Maura. Maura, who said that she will kick $250 to the Horn if we can get $250 from the larger Horn audience between now and Friday. So that's plenty of time. And that is stunning to me, simply amazing to me. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening to you there, Bob.
Hey, Reverbo, what's up, brother?
Well, God, so many good things. Show tonight is great. Wonderful stuff going on. Where do you even begin?
You know, and it's so funny because I'm not kidding. I felt like grim death before I hit the button to start the intro music. And if I was one of those faith healing types, I would say that I've been made better by this.
Well, the possum goddess is looking out for you.
I do believe she is.
She's saving one of her 17 teats for
me. Hallelujah.
Why I had to say that.
Well, you know, and now it's burned into my brain, and I have you to thank for it.
Let's see, where would be a good place to start? Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I thought everybody, even the rightest, right-wing knucklehead, was agreed on this fact, that having an employer-based healthcare system was an albatross, was a millstone, was terrible. Everybody's into like the whole, you know, we got to compete globally. I thought everybody agreed that puts us at a total disadvantage globally to have such a system. Why are we still contemplating such a system? Why don't they get off of that?
Because it's still working for a very discreet, very powerful minority of people. That's my notion.
Can I name a business that thinks that's a good idea? The GM probably just thinks that's a swell idea, huh?
Oh, they're loving it.
I mean, I thought we were past that. And that's what looks like they're trying to reorganize that idea. Yeah, we want to have the local hardware store try to pay. We want to have United Airlines in the healthcare business. I thought everybody realized that was stupid. Everybody but me, I guess.
Well, wasn't there an advertising campaign like that a few months back?
Well, these people are so interested in the global competition, making a big, you know, and keeping up with the... And it goes back to this incomprehensible cutting their own throat concept. We all seem to be cutting their own throat. We're just picking out knives we like and just jamming them in.
Is this one sharp enough? Ow. Ooh, yeah, that's sharp.
Well, I just and then you were talking about this acquisitive nature that we seem to have. It was so easy to you know, these people, these obese guys in their cut off T-shirts holding their obese little kids up, yelling, "You're taking away my job," you know, and they want to keep blowing up more mountains. Well, hey, this is easy one to figure out. You know, in 2 weeks, you got a paycheck, and that big screen TV, in that case, a beer, is in your living room at night. It takes 20 years for the air and water to poison your family. I mean, that sounds like a... I guess that must be how they figure it.
Well, you know, just a couple of nights ago, I got a message from Sue, who put together the video to the... almost level West Virginia parody that I wrote and Tanya Adkins recorded, beautifully, I might add. Then Sue built the video around it, and she said, you know, Bob, there's a couple of people you might want to respond to. And I think there was one on there saying, you know, one of the reasons that I'm laid off right now is because of you environmentalists.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't just float one of those over the rim without me getting all 7'6" and dunking it. Because I didn't take that man's job away. You know, Consol Energy, Peabody, Arch, and Massey have all publicly stated that they're leaving the coal in the ground until the profit margin gets broader for them because coal is not expensive enough right now on the open market.
Sounds like you need some brains to comprehend that one.
And, but, you know, explain that. Nah, it's them greeniacs. I done heard Don Blankenship a-talking about it.
Like I said, like your last caller said, the usual suspects, and they're just so easy to manipulate. Here's one that I read, and I wished I'd have written this. It just says it all. Stupid is a condition. Ignorance is a choice.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. I love when people get all pithy and short like that. I wished I'd have done it.
That's just beautiful. You know, how does that fit with Sue's assertion that you can't fix stupid?
Fits right in. I mean, I guess you're born stupid. I don't know. You don't have a prayer. But whoever, I mean...
Because ignorance is the absence of knowledge. Stupidity is ignorance in the presence of it.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Not pithy enough, though.
Stupid might just have a biological reason for it. But ignorance is purely a... there's a school over there. Why don't you walk over to it? Your book in library. Why don't you read it?
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of stupid, there's a story I haven't gotten to in the stack, and you have graciously opened the door for it, Reverbo. Did you hear about this? They let dim leader or former dim leader out of the compound in Dallas, and he went a traveling. Did you catch this?
Where did he go?
He got him a speaking engagement in Montreal.
Where?
You know, Montreal. You know, the French speaking part of Canada.
Yeah. Did he do pretty well up there?
Oh, it was a beautiful thing, Reverbo. Yeah. First of all, when I saw Montreal, what immediately came to mind was when Bush looked at his right-wing chum, who was at the time Prime Minister of Spain, José María Aznar. Gesundheit, bless you.
Yeah.
Aznar. And said, you know what the problem is with the French? They don't have a word for entrepreneur.
God, I miss him.
Don't you? And it was. I don't have audio to this, and that's the heartbreaking part, because they won't let his speeches be recorded. Because of people like me.
Oh.
Because of people like Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann, frankly. But it had to be just a joyous occasion. He got up and he made his speech. As I frequently have to tell Albert, are you sitting down?
Just to check here. Please take your seats. Okay.
Yes.
I am now.
Okay, good. Because I don't want you falling and hitting your head or choking on a pretzel or anything. He's back. He went to Montreal, and I can only assume that maybe it went over so well because it was a French-speaking audience and he was butchering English and couldn't understand them when they were like, quel idiot. But he visited the Fairmont Queen Elizabeth Hotel, and he spoke to a bunch of people, the Montreal Board of Trade. You know, this is just going to work out charmingly.
Oh, this is nothing but good can come of this.
He was described by the Vancouver Sun as relaxed appearing. It means the Xanax was working.
Yeah.
So, in the course of his remarks, he said the following. I am confident that I made decisions based on principle, that I made calls as best I could, and I did not sell my soul. He also said, if I had any regrets, well, one of my regrets would have to be appearing in front of that Mission Impossible sign back in 2003.
I'm sorry. Sitting down isn't going to help me do this.
That Mission Impossible sign.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Bush. Your mission, should you choose to accept it,
yeah,
is to fly out to an aircraft carrier moored 30 miles off the San Diego coast and turned in such a way as to keep San Diego from appearing in the film footage. You will land wearing a flight suit with a padded codpiece inside, and you will then deliver a speech in front of a great big banner that says Mission Impossible. Because, of course, you know, not to ruin the, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but the banner said Mission Accomplished.
Yeah, I remember that. But I can't imagine just how much.
But, you know, that's one of those calling Dr. Freud, white courtesy phone moments, because the fact of the matter is, I think that indicates that even inside the thin and sloshy gray settlings between his ears that passed for brains, even George Bush understood that Iraq was, in fact, Mission Impossible.
Do you think it was one of those Freudian slips, yeah?
Yeah, and then a little lacy hem was showing.
Yeah, he may even be capable of that. So that's his close. So far, his speaking engagements have taken him to our friends to the north.
Twice. He can't get a gig in the United States.
No.
He can't even get invited to go vomit on a Japanese prime minister.
Do you know how much money, how much searching, how much money, and how we'd have to put people on this to get to pay for a joke, like that entrepreneur joke. A smart guy, it might cost you $10,000 for that joke, and he gets it for free. He just thinks it up out of midair.
Yeah. You know, you can all, but Canada can't get a gig in the U.S. Can you imagine? He must have been dialing like crazy when he heard that Godzilla from Wasilla got a gig talking to the Chi-Coms. Hey, Carl, why can't you get me one of their speaking engagements to them little Chinamen over there? If they'll listen to that dizzy dame from Alaska, that moose killer, why can't I talk to them?
Imagine if he got paid for that. It's just, I can't even, yeah. Because if you sit down and stand up, I can't deal with news with that information like this. I just can't.
Well, let me throw one more your way. It's a moment for being proud of our buddy Joe.
Right?
He came in from putting the tarp on the Trans Am. Somebody said.
Turn up there. Yeah, he's going to have to.
Yeah.
Absolutely get that thing ready.
Yeah, you don't want the tannins from the leaves falling on the. Yeah, it's bad for the paint.
A couple sandbags in the back. He's got positive traction in that thing, but he may have to get the snow tires on. And oh, he'll have it ready.
Yeah, it'll be all right. It'll be all right. Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney came out of his. Undisclosed location again to accuse the White House of dithering about sending more troops to Afghanistan.
I thought.
Yes.
Yeah. Dithering.
And someone asked our buddy Joe what he thought about that.
Oh, what did he say?
Who cares?
Is that what he said?
And then he stopped himself. What he said was, who cares what. And then the brain kicked in. And he said, yeah, yeah, I can see the headline now. I'm getting better, guys. I'm getting a little better. You know what I mean?
The Onion couldn't have made that one up better than that. Really, that's what you say between, like, with working that power buffer on the hood of that Trans Am. You say, who cares?
Yeah.
Who effing cares?
You know, I'm proud of him because he didn't say who effing cares or who gives a...
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's progress. He is getting better. But it's not, you know... No, I thought of that because you brought up pithy a few minutes ago.
Pithy. Hard word to say on a cell phone.
Well, it makes me sound like I've got a lisp.
Yeah.
But we really mean pithy. P-I-T-H-Y.
Exactly.
That's pithy.
It's great.
Because you don't say, well, you know, I've studied the white papers and the policy documents, and I've talked with the guys from the... Department of Defense and the folks over there at the Pentagon, and I've had a recent consultation with the Secretary of Defense, and I believe that former Vice President Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney is a bit off base on this one. No, you don't say that. You don't legitimize the man with that much verbiage. You say, who gives it what he says? Or if you're getting better, as Joe Biden is, you say, who cares?
But you're still responding. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I've got to respond again to David. And this is a big, I'm glad you brought this up. I've got to get my bell over here, because this is a huge consideration. It's a constant issue, the concern everyone has of legitimizing them, of responding to them. How do we respond to them? Do we, if we ignore them, will they go away? You know, I just come back to the same old thing. That it would make a difference if Murdoch and Fox didn't own the entire mass media, because it really doesn't make any difference what we do. They're never going to go away. So what we have to make sure to do is remember that evil will prevail unless good people say something or do something. So, it's like if I just accost you in the street and I just scream just this outrageous lie right in your face. Well, you're just going to be repelled by this. You're going to be, your response is just going to be like, what? You're going to just be appalled at this behavior, my behavior. But the problem is, I have all the microphones and the cameras. And so I'm just going to turn around to the world and go, Kincaid can't take the heat. So it makes a difference what we do. Right? We can't. It doesn't matter if we ignore them. Doesn't matter if we respond to them. Doesn't matter if we. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But I agree, advisedly, because you know that's the whole reason we're doing what we're doing here.
But we're not the mass media.
No, we're not. We're trying to provide an antidote to it, and little by little, listener by listener. Horn family member by Horn family member, we are becoming the change we wish to see. And we are becoming fearless. You know, there was a long wilderness period there, Reverbo, where if you were liberal, you didn't want to say it too loud. Well, I'm at the point where I look at people and I say, yeah, I'm a liberal. You. Show me what's so great about being a conservative. You guys sure did a good job in the last 8 years. Twice as many banks failed in 2009 as 2008, and that's a process that takes years to accomplish.
Well, what do you think about responding to idiots? You say.
Well, I mean, there is that old adage, and it is very much a truism, that you do not fight a war with a man who buys ink by the barrel.
Because
he's got the thing and you don't.
But I think
and the response to that is to build the alternative.
Well, yeah. And that's what just, yeah, build the horn and all the rest of it. But I don't, it seems to me there's just no, we can't control what they do. We can just try to amplify our message.
Yes.
That's it. And so, I mean, I think there's, you know, you have to, you can't. The problem is that there's, again, it's the ignorance is a choice. Ignorance is the huge enemy. And the ignorant will just buy into any goddamn thing that, just anything that confirms their biases. Any harebrained thing.
Right, because it is not about reason. It's not about common sense. It's,
well, it was, just to be easy. So let's, okay, here's one more to talk about. Yes, the Franken thing, really quick, was it almost was like they just sent her up there to just, to what? To remind everybody that we're the pimps and you're the hookers and don't forget it, we own you. And it just looked like she was thinking that she'd be back in that weird jet drinking scotch in 45 minutes, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was just repulsive.
Wasn't she wearing pearls, too?
You know, I...
There for convenient clutching. Wait a minute. I'll tell you what. Let's... I've got it at hand, and just because it was such a delightful moment...
Oh, God. Her, yeah, it was.
Let's go back to this.
They don't know that.
Oh, God, Roth. I think we disagree on whether healthcare reform... the health care reform that we're talking about now in Congress should pass. And you said that kind of the way we're going will increase bankruptcy.
Yep, pearls.
I want to ask you, how many bankruptcies because of medical crises were there last year in Switzerland?
I don't have that number in front of me, but I could find out.
I can tell you how many it was.
Get back to you.
It's zero.
You know, hear the chuckle? Did you hear the chuckle?
Bankruptcies.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, the blade's in. Now he's going to push.
There were last year in France.
I don't have that number, but I can get back to you if you like.
Yeah, the number is zero. Do you know how many were in Germany?
From the trend of your questions, I'm assuming the answer is zero, but I don't know the precise amount, and I would have to get back to you.
Well, you're very good. You're very fast.
You're very fast.
Oh.
Everybody thought he was just going to sit in the Senate and crack jokes. But it turns out that the real comedy goodness is coming from the likes of Representative Brown, who wants to explain to Representative Grayson that the Bill of Attainder is a bill about attainder. Andy? I mean, Alan?
Yeah.
Where's my bullet?
Nip it!
She
don't now own Franken. But the problem is they don't get off the stage. It's like here's another one I wrote down. And I got to start writing my own again because I can't use those people's material. But to paraphrase, if all they've got is a bunch of lies and rage and hate, they have conceded, they've lost the debate. My reasons are stronger if that is all you have. But the problem is, so why aren't you off leaving the stage?
Yes, a question I have asked a million times.
Murdoch and Fox, it goes back to the mass media. That's why they're not leaving, because the cameras keep rolling on them. So they've lost. It's all they've done.
Case in point. If I may. I'm not going to, you know, I don't care. And, you know, David and I had a fun little conversation about the kid in the balloon. Well, it has all been, of course, exposed as a fraud. It wasn't just a screw up. It was a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Based on documents. Now, this is a family in Colorado who have appeared on the ABC show Wife Swap. And they have made contact with TLC, the producers of the show, and I don't even know what it's about, nor do I much care. John and Kate plus eight. And months ago, this family, the Balloon Boys family, approached them about a possible show, and they took a pass. The mom and the dad met in a Hollywood acting school. And they've got it in their head that they want to be a reality TV family. It turns out, according to these documents, that they hatched the plan, told their kids to lie to the authorities and the media, and that they did so, and this is just a beautiful of its sort, this is just a beautiful moment of in 21st century America. They wanted to make their family more brandable for reality television.
Again, please?
They wanted to make their family more brandable for reality television. And while they're facing conspiracy charges and this and that, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor, attempting to influence a public servant, yada, 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 as sleazy and slimy as they are, there is something about this that I want to applaud.
It is fine. I mean, you got to love a hoax, even if you despise these people. I mean, Andy Warhol might think this is great.
Well, what I like about this is that whether they meant to or not, what their ultimate crime is and what they will be punished for, Reverbo, is for exposing the dilettantish 24-second attention span, if it bleeds, it leads, nature of the news industry. Not even the news industry. Of the information as the infotainment industry.
Infotainment. Yeah, you're right. They've in their own way, they have there are people. Yeah, they managed to point out as if it needed any more pointing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here's the official phrase. Their goal was, and this is the quote out of the document, to make the Heaney or Heen family, I don't know which, more marketable for future media interests.
So, one night, they're all sitting around the Formica dinner table, and they're hatching this plan, and they're saying, what? They're going, okay, so they don't think we're crazy stupid enough? We'll show them. You don't think for one minute, and I don't even want to think about this, you don't think right now their phone lines are burning up with producers with offers for them, do you? Please tell me it's not true.
This, just like Gene Wilder and Young Frankenstein, this could work.
Why am I not on television?
Why aren't we all? You know, what was the character in Roald Dahl's Willy Wonka book and made so memorable in the Gene Wilder film? I guess this is our Gene Wilder night.
It is.
Tom TV or Johnny TV or whatever. The American kid whose entire world revolved around television. Do you remember the wife of the fireman in Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451?
Yeah.
Whose entire world revolved around interacting on the full wall-sized TV screens in their home?
I got to go back. That's Julie Christie. I got to go back and look at that.
We live there now.
Well, some of us clearly do. I wish they'd said brandable. I like that better.
Yeah, I do too. Yes, Mrs. Montag. Thank you, News Ninja Gene.
Yes, Montag. Oh God, it's just what a week. Dow Jones goes to 10,000. The Balloon Boy hoax. We got Alf Franken in command of the Senate. What else is going on here?
Oh, and it was Mike TV, by the way, the character. Mike TV.
His name was Mike TV.
Yes.
I like that. I like that. Okay, I'll leave you real quick. I'm going to leave you with one more thing.
Okay.
Everyone seems to be confused by our president, by the president of the United States. So, is he pragmatic? Is he an idealist? Is he ideological? Is he a little of both? He's a total mystery to everybody. I've been reading the blogs all week long, and what is up with this guy?
He's an enigma.
He's a Chicago politician. He's everything. He knows all about how to do this stuff. And someone wrote down, and as I wrote this one down, it's that Art of War. How do you pronounce it?
Sun Tzu.
Okay. You did a better job than I did. And someone said, one of the arts of war is to appear disorganized, thereby putting off your opponent. You can exploit that. So you don't think that's what he's doing with the Harry Reid and the Pelosi's and all the nutty stuff that's going on that he is?
Well, yeah, that falls under the general heading of the Obama Juan Kenobi theory.
Yeah. But he is a flat enigma. I mean, what is going on up there?
Well, some of that is, of course, being to go back to the general theme of what we were talking about, Verbo. Some of that is being manufactured. I was posting on the local right wing news website yesterday, and I asked the simple question because they were complaining about, you know, the Obama administration, EPA, is trying to kill the coal industry. And I simply responded, look, West Virginia, 23% of West Virginia Democrats voting in the May primary in 2008 said they did not and could not vote for Barack Obama because of his skin color. Then in the general election, when the rest of the country was going in a decidedly different direction, Barack Obama was gut stomped in West Virginia. And now you're complaining that the Obama administration isn't behaving graciously enough to you. What did you expect? And I said, as Republicans are often want to remind us, actions have consequences. Welcome to yours. But the response that came, Reverbo, was beautiful. Because, well, thank you, Bob Kincaid, for just confirming for me that that's exactly what's going on. He's an old-school Chicago politician, and in old-school Chicago politics, you don't get mad, you get even.
It's working great. Is that the point here? It's a self-fulfilled prophecy. It goes back to that thing about how he hasn't done anything, and they think he's done everything.
Yes.
Maybe he is the art of war, or what is it, politics, war without bloodshed, or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, there you go quoting Chairman Mao.
I can still do that, can I?
Well, just don't let Glenn Beck hear about it.
Oh, have a good Friday, my friend.
Oh, I'm going to try.
Yes, and make it personal. Damn it, you keep. When are you going to make it personal?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to.
I want to open up my own stock market in Davenport, Iowa. It is only open on Thursday afternoons from 1 to 3, and you have to wear a hat. If that's constitutional, I can do that, can't I?
You absolutely can.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
Davenport, look out. Reverbo's coming.
Good night.
Later, Reverbo. Bye. That's our critic at large, Reverbo. And just to finish the Bob participates in a blog story because it's kind of cute, and then I'll go back to the phones. That's what I wrote. As Republicans have reminded us, as they are wont to do, and A-R-E-W-O-N-T, W-O-N-T. It's a word. Well, one of the geniuses immediately follows it up and says, Bob Kincaid, see there? It's not W-O-N-T, it's W-A-N-T, and you can take out the R. See how that is when you pick apart people's grammar in an internet posting? That just goes to show that your ideas are desperate and you're just trying to destroy them. See, how's it feel? There's only one problem. As they are wont to do, A-R-E-W-O-N-T. It's a real phrase, it's a real word. And moron boy just didn't know it. So I had to correct him. And I used several other big words as well. I got mean that time. But really, that's the foxing of America, isn't it? And I saw, I guess maybe it was at Bart Cop, a sign on brown grocery bag paper at one of these teabagger rallies or whatever. Done in crayon, and I hope it wasn't a Photoshop. There was something about it that just said, I don't think this is a Photoshop job. It was beautiful, because in red crayon up in the corner it said, God bless Fox. But then the body of the sign said, thank you, Fox News, for keeping us informed. I-N-F-R-O-M-E-D. Go find that. Look over at Bart Cop. That might be where it is. Go find that. Print that out and put it on your wall right next to Get a Brain Morans. These guys are comedy goodness that you just can't buy. Yeah, if I had any regrets, it would probably be standing in front of that Mission Impossible sign. And to the phones we go. And, okay, you're gone. Sorry, probably somebody who couldn't stick around. So we got a couple of lines open. If you want to participate, and you are more than welcome to. Kudos to Joe Biden. Who cares what... Oh, I can see the headlines already. Beautiful thing. This in from William. In regard to the conversation of a few minutes ago. We are the cavemen of the globe. Now we're going to punch holes in Alaska and suck more toxic crud from the earth. It amazes me that after all these years and all the holes drilled, that we have not punched a hole in the wrong place and created a man-made volcano where the molten center of the earth has not leaked out unchecked and encrusted the world over. All we seem to have done is release and deposit toxins all over the ground and air and water, and in so doing, we live in our own waste, much like an unkept fish tank waiting only to spring a leak and end the misery. Yeah. Thanks, buddy. And what was said about the offshore windmills, I had a thought occurred to me. You know, everywhere that we put an oil derrick is somewhere that we can't put a windmill. Could that be part of the strategy, too? Because you've got, you know... I don't think it's paranoid to suggest that the hydrocarbon industries don't want at all ever alternative energy. They would rather see the world sink back into the dark ages. Than to do anything that they think might damage their corporate bottom line. And just for a moment of delight, let's go back to our recent hero. Check out this appearance between Representative Alan Grayson and, of all people, Chris Tweedy Matthews. It's a beautiful thing.
if it was.
We had an interesting development on the show. It got rather heated here a minute ago, Congressman. I don't know if you saw it. You may have been busy at the time, but let me tell you what happened here. Dick Cheney, and that's how you pronounce his name, was out last night in black tie along with his, well, his felon, former chief of staff, who I think took the bullet for him in that whole matter, perjury and obstruction of justice, and he wasn't out robbing gas stations. His behavior was right there in the office under Cheney's leadership. Anyway, the prosecutor in that case said there was a cloud over Cheney's head. The prosecutor obviously brought the justice to that guy, Scooter Libby. He got convicted of a number of counts of perjury and obstruction of justice. The president even held his nose and would not pardon these guys, wouldn't pardon Scooter Libby. Here's this guy with all his inglorious background out trashing the president of the United States for dithering. Your response?
Well, my response is, and by the way, I have trouble listening to what he says sometimes because of the blood that drips from his teeth while he's talking. But my response is this. He's just angry because the president doesn't shoot old men in the face. But by the way, when he was done speaking, did he just then turn into a bat and fly away?
Oh, God, we got to keep a level here. Let me ask you this. Don't you have any Republican friends?
Some of my best friends are Republicans.
Okay. Thank you very much. U.S. Congressman Alan Grayson. All right, I just dubbed him Captain Cojones. We'll see if that sticks.
Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful. And like I said, I hope it's contagious as hell inside Congress. I hope more people get this. I hope more people start piling on. Because, you know, a long time ago, relatively speaking, I said that there will, and this was in the heyday of Bush's popularity, I said there will come a day when little children will spit on the ground at the mention of Dick Cheney and George Bush's name. And I think that day is coming faster than we anticipated. That was a beautiful thing. That was a beautiful thing. Combined with, yeah, who cares? And by the way, the event that Cheney came out for, I got a heads up from David in Tennessee about this. They got all the old usual suspects, you know, Fife and Scooter and Dick and some of the other creepies to come out to this Keepers of the Flame Award 20th anniversary celebration. It was like Pee Wee football. I mean, here are all of these losers getting their little thanks for playing trophies. It was pitiful. They, you know, not only, you know, some of what Reverbo said, you know, not only will they not go away, they also insist on self-congratulation. Because the rest of the world has realized what a bunch of bloody, ham-fisted psychopaths and sociopaths they were. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm getting through the show. Feeling better.
Good. That's better. I have a question for you.
Okay.
About the balloon boy, the Heaney family.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you pronounce it? Thank you.
That's how the TV pronounces it.
Okay.
So, but they're getting everything wrong, so who knows? So here's my question is, do you think that I've seen a number of things saying that the CPS, the Child Protective Services or whatever they call it up in Colorado, that they're going to be looking into the whole case and into whether it was neglecting the child or whether it was...
Well, they've been charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor, so I guess getting little Johnny to lie is now a crime.
Well, what do you think of it? Do you think that they should be investigated or they shouldn't? Do you think...
It's a fine line for me, because frankly, if you go after this family, then somebody go down and just arrest the dickens out of Britney Spears' mom. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Any number of, you know, let's go find Macaulay Culkin's parent or parents. Let's march them off to jail.
Because they let him be on TV? Because they
pimped out their own children for their own ends, and that's what's basically going on with this family in Colorado, isn't it? I mean, it they wanted to be on the TV. And were consequently willing to do ridiculous things to try to get there. I don't know if it constitutes neglect. I mean, the kids all look to be of normal weight and growth and you know, normal. But they have certainly, I think you can make an argument, can't you, Cassie, that their minds have been abused.
Yeah. I think that stuff like that, like, completely messes with people.
Well, and if you watch any of those documentaries about child actors and how frequently they wind up just total pieces of human wreckage as adults, you can't help but say that it probably does. I mean, look at what was her name, Dana Plato, the cute little girl from Different Strokes, or Gary Coleman from Different Strokes, or the other kid from Different Strokes who went on to, like, you know, do bank heists and stuff. Look at Danny Bonaducci. Well, the stories are legion, aren't they?
Yeah, it sounds like it, but I don't know. I mean, there's something about this family, like, maybe they'll find that there's nothing really there, and maybe they won't end up pressing charges completely, or they won't end up convicting them. But I'm kind of glad that they're looking. There's just something about the way that the family acted on TV and how, like, everybody seemed scared of the dad. I don't know. I'm glad they're looking.
I think it's probably appropriate. But by the same token, that charge of contributing to the delinquency of a minor is always troubling to me, Cassie, because it means that in the interest of trying to supposedly act in the best interest of the child, you are hanging a tag on that child. Because in order to prove contributing to the delinquency of a child, you have to prove that the child is a delinquent. Because you cannot contribute to nothing.
I thought that kind of a charge was like for the Charles Dickens things of, you know, teaching kids to be pickpockets and sending them out to bring you money.
Yeah, Fagin.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that's what that was for. Like, really making kids into...
Well, you know, that's the standard charge if you catch an adult going into the liquor store and buying a six-pack of beer and coming out and handing it to a 16-year-old. That's supposedly contributing to the delinquency of a minor. That's what it's most often used for, because, among other things, it's a misdemeanor.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. There was just watching the family on TV the first day, it really just felt like there was something wasn't right.
Oh, there's something all kinds of not right. You know, anybody who says that, you know, they're going to do something to increase the marketability of their family for television purposes, ew. Just, you know, ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to run because I got to you kind of late in the program, Cassie, but I'm awfully glad you called.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
See you later.
Bye now.
Bye.
That is the future president of the United States. That's Cassie calling from Texas. Yeah, Lindsay Lohan's mom, too, while we're at it, as Cobwebs notes in the chat room. Got to arrest her. Don't forget the offers that are out there. Michael will triple your $5 contributions up to $50 for both for the horn, for Ben Birch, and for Guy James. Betsy has also offered to do the same for 5 new contributors to the horn. She will send $25 to each. And then there's Mora. And Mora will match $250 if we get $250 in the coming week. And that will make for a very nice end to October. And it will help immensely as we deal with what has to be dealt with to keep the horn on the air. So thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget the weekend schedule coming up. Of course, that's Rick's Place and the Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith begins at about 5:15 on Saturday. Rick's Place begins at about 7 on Saturday. And then at 9 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday evening, all foxed up with John Fox all the way from Australia. Conversation radio resumes on the horn at that time. Have a great weekend, and thanks for everything. Thanks for keeping the horn going. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Thanks to John Fox, to Ben Birch, to Peter Godbold, to Sue, to Lottie, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, and to our blogger, Texas Betsy. And again, thanks to all of you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
It is the 23rd day of October. Tomorrow being a Saturday, and the 24th of October, as we've noted through the week, the horn will be 4 years old. Hot diggity. Pretty exciting. And what a testament it is to all of you who have given so much of yourselves, your time, your energies, your ideas, your creativity, and yes, your financial support to help us reach this fourth birthday. The ideas behind the horn are actually older than four. My broadcast career is more than four. My broadcast career started when I was 15, so we won't count all that. I mean, it's hard to count Jesus. This is Jimmy as part of gospel. Never mind. But we're four. And, you know, I'm proud of a lot of things that have to do with the horn. I'm proudest, though, of the activism. You know, this is activist radio, and I'm proudest of the activism that you have felt moved to participate in. And I don't know if you got your email from brighterplanet.com or not, but for those of you and the truth seekers over with the Malloy Show, for those of you who kicked in your three votes each at brighterplanet.com and voted for the SEED project in the Coal River Valley of West Virginia. Thank you, and congratulations. Took a little time for the word to get around, but we won. We won with that project. I say we because I'm a West Virginian, and this is a win for West Virginia as we try to look toward a sustainable, reasonable economic future and build a way from what has tormented this state for over 100 years, coal. And you had a big hand in it. There's a map there. If you look at brighterplanet.com, there's a map that show where the votes for the projects came from, for I think the top three projects. And you'll note that there's a significant cluster around West Virginia of little green dots, and that's to be expected. What's not so much to be expected is the proliferation of dots around the country in places you would not expect folks to be interested in a project centered in Appalachia. All up and down the West Coast, up into the Northeast, all over this country, out into the Midwest. That's you. That is you. And that is the difference that you made. And it just makes me bust with pride. So thank you. On behalf of the SEED Project, on behalf of Andrew Munn, on behalf of Cold River Mountain Watch, thank you. So it is our fourth birthday tonight. We're celebrating a day early. And like an unwanted birthday gift, I'm feeling a little rough. I don't know if what's been around our family over the last month has come back for round two, or if it's just a day of ugh. But I'm feeling a little rough. I don't know if I'm going to get through 3 hours of program tonight, but I will give it the old college try. Because there's some stuff out there for this Friday on the front porch that just can't be missed. In addition to me feeling a little rough, apparently I'm the first human being who can make a computer sick. Because the internet has died on the production machine, and some of the stuff that I wanted to get to, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to, but we're going to try. And at some point in time, I will probably have to reboot this machine just to see if I can get back into the chat room, get email, all of those fun things. Never a dull moment, you know. But I wanted to start. Representative Alan Grayson from Florida is fast making a reputation as the hammer of Republicans. Not a hammer among Republicans, because he's a Democrat. He is a hammer, and Republicans are nails. And he is driving them like John Henry the steel-driving man. And this latest incident is absolutely fascinating, and that's why it's kind of frustrating for me not to be able to get to the audio that I had, because I wanted you to hear it in Alan Grayson's own words, because they are magnificent. Alan Grayson actually had the guts to stand up against the Republican Party in regard to ACORN, you know, which is, the Association of Community Organizers for Reform Now, ACORN, has become the bête noire, the great crusade of the nut job right, including people like Representative Paul Brown from Georgia. And in this transaction took place in a hearing of the Science and Technology Committee. And Brown was having a hissy, trying to get some sort of bill across that would single out ACORN and strip it of federal funding. This is, of course, unconstitutional. And Alan Grayson ate him for lunch. And it's inspiring. And it's also funny. Don't have the audio at present, I don't think. Nope. Which is a shame. So we'll just do the reader. Mr. Grayson says,